From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
To Robbie and Juju's Map battling for second behind a no-doubt champion. Echo Zulu wins the Neck Jets Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies by 5.5 lengths. Got Stormbreaker's next, and then Ivar on the outside and Cossack Reed. They're coming down to the line, and Space Blues has won the Breeders' Cup Mile. Modern Games on the outside, closing that gap, Dakota Gold and Slipstreamer next, but it's Modern Games. Modern Games will win the Juvenile Turf.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They're coming past the 16th pole. It's Life Is Good, and this colt is incredible. Life Is Good. Won it by 6 lengths over Ginobili. It's Broom with 1 furlong to run. Yabir is closing on the outside. Broom and Yabir down to the wire. It is Yabir and William Buick to win the turf. Lieutenant Dan trying to make a race of it in second. Emiratiana is third on the inside, but it is Golden Pal. Golden Pal, wire to wire in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to a post-Breeders' Cup edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, all across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and around the country, and of course, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Well, now that the 38th Breeders' Cup World Championships are in the books, and a great look back at the championship days there from Larry Colmus in our Open, much of the conversation in thoroughbred racing will shift to the Eclipse Awards and which horses are going to be voted champion in their respective divisions. And as is usually the case, there will be a lot of emphasis placed on what transpired at Del Mar last Friday and Saturday. And there are going to be plenty of obvious choices. Undefeated 2-year-old filly Echo Zulu. Well, she should be a unanimous choice for champion juvenile filly. Corniche remained perfect with his front-running victory in the juvenile, and he is likely to be named juvenile champion off that win. He's the Winterbook favorite now for the Kentucky Derby. And in case you're wondering, never too early for a Derby countdown. 175 days, 7 hours, 42 minutes, and 1 second until the Run for the Roses May 7th at Churchill Downs. And although I do think it's pretty much a done deal, I don't think it's quite as cut and dry as it is with Echo Zulu. And here's why. Remember, Jack Christopher was the morning line favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and had to be scratched. He is also undefeated. Now, Corniche may have beaten him anyway, but I think Jack Christopher steals a few votes from Corniche, which is why I say it's not quite as obvious as Echo Zulu, who really should be the unanimous choice for Juvenile Filly. How good was she? She is brilliant, and it is going to be so much fun to watch her develop into her 3-year-old season. See, she actually ran slightly faster than Corniche. 142.24, her time in the juvenile fillies. Corniche completed the same distance in 142.50. Not a big difference, but if they were running head-to-head, it would be. Latruska was beaten for the first time in 6 starts, but her resume this year is plenty strong enough for her to be named champion older female. I don't think you're going to get much pushback on that one. And not only was she beaten in that Breeders' Cup distaff, the winner of that race was the second Japanese runner to grace the winner's circle at this year's Breeders' Cup. Let me say that again. The second Japanese runner to grace the winner's circle at this year's Breeders' Cup. Marsh Lorraine paid $101 to win in the biggest upset of this year's event. I guess maybe it's time we start taking the Japanese runners a bit more seriously. We talked about the fact that they were coming to this year's Breeders' Cup with record numbers. Japan had one Breeders' Cup winner coming into this year's event. That was Kara Conti, who won the 2014 Breeders' Cup Mile. They walk away with two here in 2021. So congratulations to all of those connections and horses that we probably don't want to quickly dismiss when they come here for an event like the Breeders' Cup. Nick's Go, well, he's going to be champion older male, and he's going to be horse of the year. And I mentioned the big Breeders' Cup for Japan. How about the big Breeders' Cup for Maryland breds? Nick's Go and Breeders' Cup sprint winner Aloha West, both bred in Maryland. In the previous 37 runnings of the Breeders' Cup, Maryland breds had five victories. And much like the Japanese, they come away this year with two trophies. You're going to hear from trainer Wayne Catalano, who saddled Aloha West. He will join me coming up after the first commercial break, right around 8:15 Eastern. And Cricket Goodall, who is the executive director of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horse Breeders Association, she's going to be with me coming up right around 8:40 Eastern time to look back on what that means for a state's breeding program. It's huge. And congratulations to them. But what about the champion three-year-old male category? This is arguably the most intriguing of any Eclipse category this year. And the results of the Breeders' Cup Classic may or may not have cleared this up for you. Essential quality coming into the Breeders' Cup was the presumed front runner in this division. And although he ran a very good race to finish third, he was three quarters of a length behind Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit. Again, both horses, they have similar resumes this year. Medina Spirit, for now, is the Kentucky Derby winner. And we may not have a final decision on his status prior to the Eclipse votes being cast. So if that's the case, when voters, myself included, sit down to cast their vote, Medina Spirit has to be considered the Kentucky Derby winner. Essential Quality won the Belmont Stakes, and both have an additional grade one win on their resume after those classic victories. Essential Quality won the Travers. Medina Spirit won the Awesome Again over older horses, by the way, and I think that's important to point out. For me, the fact that Medina Spirit has finished in front of Essential Quality in both of their head-to-head meetings, and the fact that Medina Spirit beat older horses this year gives him the edge. That makes him the three-year-old champion here in 2021. And that leads me to the poll question this morning. Who should be champion three-year-old male? And I'll give you a few choices. Well, here you go. Medina Spirit, Essential Quality, and I'll give you an other category if you think it's somebody else, but it's not going to be Hot Rod Charlie. Game, gutsy, grade one winner, doesn't have the resume that a Medina Spirit and an Essential Quality have. It's not going to be Rombauer. Won the Preakness, had a good year, but he doesn't really have a dog in this fight. It really comes down to Medina Spirit, Essential Quality. But if you're a bit of a contrarian, you want to look at this from a different angle, that's cool. Let me know. Click other. Let me know who you think it is. You can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts. Who should be champion three-year-old male here in 2021? And I guess a big question is, will voters penalize Medina Spirit for the pending Derby decision that's hanging over him? I won't. You remember after the news broke of the betamethasone in his system and Bob Baffert did his press conference, the following week I was joined on this show by Dr. Mary Scalay, the executive director of the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission and the former equine medical director here in the state of Kentucky. And I asked her point blank, is that a medication that would have made Medina Spirit run faster? Did it cause him to win the Kentucky Derby because this was in his system? And she told me unequivocally, no, absolutely not. It's not that type of drug. We're not talking about blood doping here. We're talking about in this case, it appears to be like a topical cream. But regardless of that fact, and knowing what Dr. Scalay said on this program, I will not hold that against Medina Spirit. I'm not going to take that away from the horse. And for now, and maybe even moving forward, he is the Kentucky Derby winner until a decision is made. And it likely will not come before the Eclipse votes need to be cast. That's in late December. Early January. Late December. And until that time, he is the Kentucky Derby winner. So I won't hold it against the horse. I think Medina Spirit should be champion 3-year-old male. His body of work, his resume this year, he deserves that. All right, again, Wayne Catalano going to join me coming up 8:15 Eastern. Really anxious to hear your thoughts on that topic, too. I think that there will be people on both sides of that fence. Wayne Catalano, 8:15 Eastern. Cricket Goodall coming up 8:40. Going to be joined by Byron King from the Blood Horse to look back on this year's Breeders' Cup. I'll ask him that question, get his thoughts on who he thinks is going to be named champion 3-year-old male. 9:20 Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. I will visit with Carl Woods. You may know him better as Dink. That is his nickname. Everybody around the racetrack knows him as Dink. He is the California Starting Gate crew member who you saw or you heard if you were listening to us on the radio with the Breeders' Cup. Him being loaded into an ambulance prior to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf when all hell broke loose before that race. Carl was the man that was injured and was being helped off and loaded into an ambulance. He tells that story, and I honor him as this week's unsung hero coming up at 9:20 Eastern. You will not want to miss that segment. Trainer Michael McCarthy, fresh off his big win with CC in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. He's going to be with me right around 9:40. 10 o'clock, we kick off hour three with In the Room with Sean Clancy. He sits down with jockey Arnaldo Bocachica, live from Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Kurt Becker stroll through racing history at 10:25, and then Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin. I ask, they answer. That segment coming up right around 10:30 Eastern time this morning. So it's a very busy show, as always, jam-packed. We kick it off with Wayne Catalano when I come back. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for 3-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
Hi, this is jockey Drayden Van Dyke. You're listening to HRRN.
dreaming of Anna's ass to kick for home, and she does so willingly, but Octave in the blue colours down at the rail is looming the danger. Appealing Zofia in the white cap, hanging tough, and Cotton Blossom on the grandstand side. Four of them line up as they pass the 300. Now it's Dreaming of Anna and Octave, but Octave is catching her stride for stride down the centre. Dreaming of Anna digs deep. She calls up all her class. Octave can't get to her, and Dreaming of Anna and Rene Douglas have taken the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Election three quarters. Octave again second. Cotton Blossom finished up third, and Appealing Zofia was fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. And that was Trevor Denman with the call 15 years ago, Dreaming of Anna, giving trainer Wayne Catalano his first of four Breeders' Cup victories. And boy, was that a big one. She was simply spectacular that day. And throughout her entire career, really, she was tremendous. And Wayne added that fourth victory this past Saturday at Del Mar when Aloha West stormed to victory in the Breeders' Cup sprint. And when I say stormed, the margin was very, very narrow, but Aloha West put in that customary late kick, and the Catman was ready to strike again, and he pounced this time, as did Aloha West. And Wayne Catalano is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Wayne, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Man, everything's great, brother. I want to mention, too, this interview presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Wayne, what a moment that was last weekend, huh?
It was great. It was really a close call, as everybody knows, but I'm getting a little too old for them close ones like that. It was a great run.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love Aloha West. I bet Aloha West in that previous race at Keeneland, and I love closers like this. But, boy, they can test your heart, can't they?
Yeah, they do. Yes, they do. It was a great run, though. We was all proud of him, obviously, and he did a great job. He came back good. We're all happy with him.
Put me there with you at Del Mar as you're watching the race unfold. Walk me through it.
Okay, we up there, we're trying to find my box. We get to the box, we get all set. The race goes off. I see he breaks okay, and then he kind of shuffles back just a little bit. I'm okay. Everything's good. And he goes down the backside. Jose asks him to move a hair. He goes by two horses. I said, okay. We get up there. We go past a couple of horses, and Jose's got him in perfect position. Everything's great. He's in behind the horses. He's saving the ground around there. He edges up close again. When he turns for home, he gets straight this time. He shifts them out to the clear track, and he makes a nice run. He's running mid-stretch. Like, man, is he going to get there? We got him running. He's running great. Everything's good. And he hits the wire. I'm like, oh, I think I got beat on the live shot, the first shot at it. I'm like, man, I couldn't see it as well. And I thought, man, looks like we got nailed there. And then I watched the second shot as well. Close. Third shot, I'm like, whoa, I might have got there. I took all three shots for me to think, you know, I got a shot to hang it up. And then it didn't take long to hang the number up. And obviously, you know, we went crazy from there. We was all happy and jumping up and down and trying to run to the winner's circle and trying to get in there. And it was unbelievable.
You mentioned Jose Ortiz. And look, I mean, Jose, his brother, Erad, these are two of the best riders that we have in the game today. They have been for several years. You're a former rider, Wayne. So are jockeys, are they taught? Is there a skill that you learn where you know where that wire is and you want that horse's head coming down at the wire? Is that a thing?
It's not. It's kind of like Jose did what you're supposed to do. The imaginary wire is a jump or two past the wire.
Really?
You have to go a jump past the wire or two. That's your imaginary line. You want to be riding through the wire, not at the wire.
Okay, why is that?
That's where the difference comes at. Well, because you want to do what he did. That's how he got up.
Yep.
You know, you don't want to misjudge it too close. You just ride right through the wire. You go past the wire. People stand up like a jump right at the wire. That's not good. You want the motion. You want the head. You want him running. You want him going. You want him in that stride. It's the wire.
Yeah. Wow.
That's the difference.
It was spectacular, and he's so good at that. I mean, he's Jose Ortiz for a reason, and he rode him beautifully.
He's a great ride. He did a great job. I seized him at kidding on the square at the press conference. He made up the difference for last ride on him.
Yeah. Well, you stuck with him. You gave him another shot.
We did. Aaron talked to him. He talked to me. He said, what do you want to do? I said, listen, he's a great rider. You know, he likes the horse. He knows the horse. He thinks he can win the race. Let's go with it. Let's stay with the rider.
When did you know it
worked out?
When did you know you had something here with Aloha West, that you might have this caliber of horse?
Well, you know, all along he showed like he had a little talent. You know, he acted like he had talent. Lacey Pierce, my assistant trainer, got on the first day he come in. She was really liking him a lot, you know, just riding him the first time, just liking the way he traveled. She thought he's okay. And then he went to running some good races. And the last two races at Saratoga was amazing races. So for Nan, the numbers went up. He goes 102 higher. I mean, you know, when you get a 6 on the rag sheets, that's a pretty good horse, you know. And he just kept getting better and better. And after the Phoenix, he worked lights out. I told Aaron when he called me, said, how do you work? I said, work lights out. I said, Aaron, this might be the best horse I've ever had my hands on. He said, wow, that's a big statement coming from you. You had a few good ones.
Yeah, some very good ones.
That's how that went down.
Wow, some very good ones. That is a big – you feel like this might be the best of the best, Wayne?
Right now, you know, I'm hoping this is the one. You know, this is the one that put us over the whole top. I mean, we had some really, really good horses. I've been fortunate enough to have good clients with good horses, good help, great career, you know, as a jockey, and, you know, great career as a trainer. And these are the ones you get up every morning for. It makes it a lot easier, the 7 day a week. And everybody that works all so hard on these horses and love the horses and help. And, you know, these are the races you want to do it with. So this is the pinnacle right here. This is what you want.
And to
this
do
is
it
what
for
you want
to
do.
To do it for a guy like Aaron Wellman, too, and Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, a guy who busts his tail and puts so much back into the sport, that has to be rewarding, too.
Yes, he's done a great job. He's got a good eye for Horace. He's a gentleman. He checks all the boxes. He really, really does. I mean, everybody's telling me how nice he was and the interviews. And obviously, I saw and heard a little bit of it. But when I'm in the moment right there, you don't see it all as much as you watch it later on. So at that moment and the praise that he gave me, and it was incredible. And everybody is so happy for me. Not only, you know, congratulating and good job and all, it was so happy for me. It felt so great. And get like Mr. Pletcher responding like not just good luck and congratulations. He's like, you know, great training job. When you get your peers to respect you like that and praise you, I think that's the highest accolade you can get.
No, there's no doubt about it. Visiting with trainer Wayne Catalano, fresh off that big win with Aloha West in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Wayne, we heard the call of Dreaming of Anna winning the Juvenile Fillies in 2006. That was your first Breeders' Cup winner. Your most recent one coming into this year was in 2011 with Stephanie's Kitten. It's been 10 years. I couldn't believe that when I was looking at it.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're far and in between, but they were great. And, you know, we got 4 wins out of 15 starts, so, I mean, I can't get better than that.
No way at all. Wayne Catalano, you're closing in on 3,000 career wins now, Wayne. How big of a deal is that for you?
That's what I'm looking to do. You know what? 3,000 career wins as a trainer when there's only 36 in the whole country that got 3,000 puts you pretty good up there, you know. So it's one of the things I'm shooting for, you know, for my career. I finish out not as much finish out, but I want to get to the 3,000. I really want to get to that 3,000. It's kind of hard right now. It's not so many horses with the chances. And, you know, you need horses to win races. It's horse racing. And we have, you know, we're kind of light on the horses, as I said before, but we're getting there. We had a couple of winners the last couple of days. So we got, 2,933.
Yeah. And you know what? You're sitting there with over 1,500 wins as a jockey, too. So this is
right. This
has been one hell of a career for you.
Yeah, we got 1,792 for the jockey.
Yeah, it's been one heck of a career for you, my friend.
We've been blessed. And, you know, my lovely bride and my family, it's nothing better than to do it with all them, you know, and enjoying it with me. So, you know, we're happy about that.
How'd you celebrate after that big win last weekend?
Well, we went back to the room. We got something to eat, and then they had a little party, and we just had a little, went with Eric at dinner, and, you know, we had a nice dinner and nice conversations, and that was we went to a little party after that, and that was how we celebrated. But it was great. My wife got to come out there because she's at home with the horses at the house and everything, but she got to come out there and enjoy it, so it made it special for me having her with me.
Did you get to break out any of those famous Wayne Catalano dance moves?
We did. We had to, you know. People come to see that, right? Now they want to see my video cooking show.
Your video cooking show?
Yeah. They got me on Twitter cooking. Everybody wants to see my, what you cook tonight? What are you cooking? I just cooked up a win in the Breeders' Cup.
Other than winning the Breeders' Cup Sprint, what's your specialty?
You know what? I don't have a real specialty. I'm pretty good at it. I can cook them barbecue shrimp from Pasquale Manali's in New Orleans. I like that dish pretty good. And then obviously steaks and chicken and chops. I do it all. We just cook what we eat. You know, I don't do nothing fancy. It's just what I'm having for dinner. That's what I cook. Guys, this is what I have for lunch. This is what I have for dinner. They just want to see it. They like it. I put on it, you know. I do a good job with it, but nothing, you know, we're not no gourmet cook, but we're good.
Not quite Bobby Flay, but hey, that's okay. You don't have to be when you're winning the Breeders' Cup Sprint.
I could beat Bobby Flay.
Yeah, you got to do that. Beat Bobby Flay.
I'm gonna
take him on.
With Bobby Flay. Yeah, we'll get a good promotion going there.
Yeah,
beat Bobby Flay. Bobby Flay's got to go, but I got to have him like me. It got to be handicapped. One arm, with the phone in one hand and the spatula in the other hand. Going from the hip, not everything handed to you and already and everything. Let's roll. Let's do it. Let's freelance it.
I love it. So we just called out Bobby Flay on national radio. I love
yes,
it. Let's get this thing going.
All right.
Bobby, Flay versus Catalano won.
We congratulate Mr. Bobby Flay for winning his Breeders' Cup. It was a beautiful race.
Yeah. Yeah. Special Philly. Pizza
yeah.
Bianca.
Yeah.
Wayne, listen, appreciate
it. He might have dodged a bullet, though, because I had a horse called Dress. Could have probably beat him. I'll be like Chad Brownson. If I got anybody in a race, I would have won. I told him, yeah.
Well, Wayne, listen, man, it's always fun to catch up. Been too long. Really enjoy it, and congratulations again on that big win.
Thank you so much. Nice talking to you, Mike. You guys have a nice day.
All right. Is he not the best or what? Little off kilter, but he's the greatest. A lot of fun. Wayne Catalano, Aloha West. Congratulations to him. We have to get that together. Wayne loves to cook. You heard him talk about it. He just called out Bobby Flay. He said he could beat him. Bobby's got that show, Beat Bobby Flay. We'll see if we can put that together. That would be fun for charity. That would be a lot of fun. We'll see. But he's got a handicap, Bobby Flay. Put a hand behind his back or something. All right, that interview, by the way, brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water. And remember, whatever your day brings, at the track or in life, you can reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Jellyfish Water is the start of a new day, the recovery from a long day, and the mindset to succeed every day. Life begins with water. Success begins with you. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. All right, when I come back after this Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, it is time to get you ready to bet the races with today's first bet. And then our Industry Star of the Week segment presented by Stuart Morris. This week, I get a chance to welcome in Cricket Goodall, the executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. Wayne just talked about one Maryland bred to win a Breeders' Cup race. Nick's Go is the other. We'll talk about each of them and what that means to the Maryland Horse Program when I return, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
To be labeled a titan of the turf is neither to be taken lightly nor a term to be recklessly bandied about. By anybody's measure or means, the subject of this piece has to be unqualifiedly classified as indeed a true titan of the turf. His lifetime spanned the administrations of American presidents Ulysses S. Grant through Lyndon Baines Johnson. And when he passed away in 1966 as a nonagenarian at the age of 92, a bright, sparkling light in the world of thoroughbred racing suddenly went dark. He was born in a small cottage in Brooklyn, New York, on July 23, 1874, on land, which later became part of the old Sheepshead Bay racetrack. At the age of 11, on the very day Grover Cleveland was inaugurated as president, he joined the racetrack colony as an errand boy for the Dwyer Brothers stable while sleeping in the loft. He became a jockey at the age of 16 and rode until 1901, when he switched to training. His last mount was a horse called Agnes D, who finished dead last in a field of five in the title stakes at Sheepshead Bay. The scales of justice were to be balanced, as it were, since Agnes D was the very first winner he saddled as a trainer a few races later, and with that win came the inception of an absolutely phenomenal career. Between 1907, when tabulated records began, and the end of his five-star career, he saddled 2,275 winners, including virtually every major stakes race east of the Mississippi. His inaugural stakes winner was Stargaze in the Merchants and Citizens Handicap in the Saratoga Cup. This guy only had a sixth-grade formal education, and he rode very poorly, but he trained thoroughbreds with unmatched success for the likes of Colonel E.V. D. Morrell, James F. Quincy Johnson, Ambassador Breckinridge Long, Senator Johnson Camden, William Woodward Sr. and Jr., Ogden Mills Phipps, Ogden Phipps, Edith Woodward Bancroft, Mrs. Whitney Sloan, dancer Vernon Castle, and a warden at the Sing Sing Prison, among many, many others. His horses, including Bold Ruler, Nashua, and Gallant Fox, won 470 stakes races. He often said his best distance horse had been Diabolo, and Johnstown his best sprinter. To this day, he's the only trainer with two Triple Crown winners to his credit, Gallant Fox and Omaha. Among other standouts he trained were Apache, Bossuet, Fighting Fox, Vagrancy, Bushanda, High Voltage, Misty Morn, Mary Lassie, and Happy Gal. The subject of this profile had another quite remarkable talent as well. He developed his own veterinary supplies for ailing horses, and he personally used them as well as prescribing them for others. Eddie Arcaro at one time had severe bursitis problems and very nearly quit riding as a result. But the man herein being profiled put Arcaro on a leg paint he had developed for horses. Now, Eddie may have had a horsey smell about him going postward, but it helped him put on many of those inimitable pumping, driving finishes going to the wire. Yes, indeed, he did have a way with riders. In the early 1900s, he took a young Hebrew rider under his tutelage whose name was Walter Miller. Miller had not ridden a single winner in 1907, his apprentice year, but in 1908 he won 388 races while under the tutorial guidance of our man. That 388 win record stood for 40 years. Hedley Woodhouse was the last to ride in the colors of our subject, red and orange. Woodhouse once apologized for giving one of his horses less than satisfactory a ride in a major stakes race, and our man replied, quote, "You couldn't have ridden him any worse than I would have." The man who went his way to meet the Grim Reaper in that great paddock in the sky at the nonagenarian age of 92 in 1966 won the Kentucky Derby three times, the Preakness four times, the Belmont six times, the Jockey Club Gold Cup seven times, the Lawrence Realization, Wood Memorial, and Alabama Stakes eight times, the Dwyer nine times, and the Saratoga Cup a remarkable 10 times. He was the man who once said, quote, "When you're away from New York, you're camping out." The saga of this venerable monument to thoroughbred racing, worthy of a Homerian epic, and the stuff of which legends are crafted, was a legend in his own time. He was Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, the man from Brooklyn.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs October 31st through November 28th with the same strong purses we've had all year, and you are not going to want to miss it. highlighted by the graded stakes such as the Grade 3 Chalukie, the Grade 2 Fall City, Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club, and the Grade 2 Goldenrod, along with the Grade 1 Clark, this November meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com. That's ChurchillDowns.com.
Hi, this is jockey Umberto Rispoli, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As they make their way to the top of the stretch, it is Nick Skoe, and he's going to try to take him the distance here. Nick Skoe comes wide for the stretch drive. Hot Rod Charlie on the inside is second, and then comes Medina Spirit, Art Collector, and Essential Quality into the final furlong, and it is Nick Skoe! Nick Skoe has a 2.5 length lead. Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Essential Quality. Nick Skoe! Wins the Breeders' Cup Classic. Medina Spirit was second. Essential Quality was third. And Hot Rod Charlie was fourth. And a final time of 1:59.57 seconds.
Larry Culmus with the call of last weekend's Breeders' Cup Classic. Nick Skoe cementing his case for champion older male and for horse of the year. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That was impressive. It was emphatic. And very quick time, too. The fastest running of the Breeders' Cup Classic since Raven's Pass. I think that was 2008, if I recall from our coverage on Friday and Saturday. And by the way, thank you to everyone who tuned into our coverage. We have received so many nice notes about that coverage Friday and Saturday. Really appreciate all of our listeners for taking time to join us for Racing's Championship Days. Well, Nick Skoe is one of two Maryland-bred winners on this year's Breeders' Cup program. And coming up in just a minute, I'm going to be joined by Cricket Goodall, the executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. But first, it is time to get you ready to bet the races today with today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 6 at Laurel Park, the $100,000 Smart Halo Stakes at 6 furlongs, post time 3:09 Eastern. Number 5, By the Best, is 7-2 on the morning line, has a 31% win projection from first bet, rates 10 points higher than the next closest rival, ranks first or second in 6 of the top 10 first bet handicapping factors for the race. With back-to-back wins at Delaware Park, By the Best has shown pace versatility, and in this stakes debut for trainer Cal Lynch, should be a very good bet. Number 5, By the Best, in race 6 at Laurel, is today's first bet. And I'm back in 60 seconds to visit with Cricket Goodall right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
All right, well, Cricket Goodall from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association set to join me momentarily. We are working on getting a hold of Cricket, and we'll have a chance to talk to her about the success of the Maryland bred runners. If you are just joining me, I told you that Japan had a massive Breeders' Cup as well. They had two victories on that program, and coming into this year's event, they had just one with Kara Conti, who won the Breeders' Cup Mile back in 2014. So a huge day for Japan, a massive day for Maryland Breds with Nick Skoe and Aloha West both getting victories. And Cricket is indeed with me now. And by the way, Cricket Goodall is this week's Industry Star of the Week. Her and her team do fantastic work. And this interview brought to you by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. With multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is indeed your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. And nobody better to honor as our industry star of the week on this Saturday morning than Cricket Goodall, the executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. Cricket, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing really, really well. And, you know, I'm so excited for you and for the team up there and for everybody in Maryland who works so hard day in and day out to make that program a success. But boy, congratulations on Nixco and on Aloha West.
Yeah, what a big day for Maryland it was. Little old Maryland. We really shined, and it was such an important day for us. I wish I could take the credit. I can't. We try to cultivate and reward small breeders and that are dedicated to this sport. And those two, you know, Katie Voss and Bob Manfuso and Angie Moore and Sabrina are two of those people. And we're so proud to have them in our state and have them produce the product that can go out there and win Breeders' Cup races.
Coming into this year's event, Maryland Breds had five victories in the Breeders' Cup, one of those courtesy of Nixco last year, who won the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. It started with, what, Concern and, no, Safely Kept in 1990, and then Concern, and then Cigar, and then came Sharing in 2019, and, of course, Nixco. To be able to say, Cricket, that Maryland had two Breeders' Cup winners in a single year, what does that mean to the state and to the program?
It's just amazing. I mean, it's just an amazing feat. I was watching on at home because I wasn't able to go. And, you know, we had high hopes, obviously, for Nixco, and we knew about the other Maryland Breds that were running that day. But, you know, you never know. And, of course, Aloha West, you know, left it to the half a nose win. But just so exciting. And so, you know, Maryland really is going to rally around this. And those people, those groups are still breeding horses in Maryland. You know, some of the other Breeders' Cup winner producers are still here as well. David Hayden, who bred Safely Kept. And so it's just a nice compliment, a nice reward for small breeders. And isn't that what the Breeders' Cup should be about? I mean, I know that it's dominated by Kentucky and New York and other places, but actually not New York as much as Florida. But, you know, Maryland wants to shine, and we got a chance to do that on a big stage.
Wayne Catalano joined me in the previous segment, and he walked me through the race with Aloha West. And, of course, it was that late charge, and you mentioned the half a nose. It was, as Tom Durkin would say, a flared nostril was the only margin of victory there for Aloha West. It was a very thin margin. As he was watching the race, he was talking about, you know, not sure if he got it, then he was sure, then he wasn't sure, and then when they posted the number, everybody exploded, and they started jumping up and down, and it was a huge celebration. How about for you?
Yeah, it was almost, you know, unbelievable to be watching it and have that happen. Yeah, you just, what could you do? You're all holding your breath because it was, we couldn't really tell watching TV until they put the photo up. And so it was just waiting and holding your breath. And what, you know, just that's the way racing should be, shouldn't it? I mean, to have that horse, what a big heart he had to do that, you know, to really make that charge and put his head down when it mattered. It just, the whole day had exciting races. So you can't take anything away from that, but to have Maryland shine on that stage. And the interesting part about it, that horse was shown in our yearling show. We do an annual yearling show every year for Maryland bred horses, Maryland bred and Maryland sired horses. And he showed in the show that year. We had, I think, another Breeders' Cup runner that showed. So that shows sort of the quality that we have. And we, you know, the Katie and Bob and a couple of people go ahead and show their horses, prepare them, get them ready to be in a horse show. And then they usually sell them. They're commercial breeders, but to have him shine on that stage. And Katie still has the whole family too, which is very nice. Or, you know, that's the other part you want to see for breeders. Do they still have relatives of this horse that is now, you know, shine the light on their program? And she does. So that's really exciting as well.
Well, you didn't have to sweat it out when Nixco in the Classic. He was simply brilliant yet again, and that's kind of become his M.O. He puts in these brilliant performances. I think he cemented his case, certainly for champion older male, and I would go out on a limb and say he's a shoe-in to be Horse of the Year. I don't see anybody else that could even rival him in that category. To have a Maryland bred be voted National Horse of the Year, what an honor that's going to be.
Again, that's just something that is amazing to us, to have little Maryland show that what we do here works, and that the people who do it are dedicated to it. The infrastructure is strong, and they pay attention. And yeah, Nick Scow is an amazing horse. He's been an amazing horse now for quite some time. I think we've had him on the cover of our magazine now 3 or 4 times. But, you know, what can you say when you've got a horse that good? And to, yeah, just look like he's galloping around out there. I mean, he didn't look like he took a deep breath, which is, you know, it's amazing to see the job that Brad Cox has done and his crew. But what a horse, and to show off again on a big stage. You just can't, you know, you can't buy that. And to have Maryland, you know, Breeders' Cup Day, you hope that the smaller states or the smaller breeders are rewarded along with the people, you know, with the larger pocketbooks, per se. And that happened for us. I don't know, you know, we've never seen it before in that kind of meaningful, you know, that many rewards. It was almost a, you know, just more than you could hope for, obviously. Yeah. More than we could hope for.
Yeah, you mentioned the strong infrastructure with the Maryland Horse Program, the breeding program, even the sales program. What does that infrastructure entail, Cricket? What's so strong about that infrastructure?
Well, I think Maryland, like Kentucky, has had such a long history with horses and horse sports and horse breeding, more so than the regional states around us. And so consequently, you have really, really good horsemen who are dedicated to producing good horses, sport horses, good race horses. And they will do everything in their power to do that, whether they race their own or breed to sell commercially or do a combination of both. They know what they're doing and they're dedicated. And it's tough. It's a tough business. As we all know, breeding horses is expensive and it takes a long-term commitment. And that's what, thankfully, Maryland has. We've had people who, you know, they've been in this business a long time. Katie Voss, her whole family has been in it. Bob Manfuso owned the racetracks here. He was, you know, he had been in it a long time. In fact, after the race, I touched base with Katie and she said that, you know, she only wished Bob could be there. He died a couple of years ago, but she said this would have been his crowning achievement. And, you know, what a way to celebrate a man who is dedicated to this industry. And then you've got, on the other hand, Sabrina Moore and her mother, Angie, who are relatively new and, you know, got lightning in a bottle with this horse. I mean, just, you know, you'd never know what you're going to get. It was a new stallion and a young mare, and look what happened. So that just shows that you've got all, it takes all kinds, and we've got all kinds here in Maryland to really support the business.
Visiting with Cricket Goodall, who is the executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. Cricket, speaking of celebrating the horse and celebrating the Maryland program, you are doing that through a new initiative that you have created, which is a Maryland Horse Library. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Maryland Horse Breeders Association has been around since 1929, started by a group of, you know, horsemen, just as I was talking about, that were here and wanted to preserve and protect the industry and celebrate it. So, you know, we advocate for the industry here. We do a lot of things. We publish a magazine, the Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred. We coordinate the Maryland Million Day races. But we'd never really had a permanent home. We were renting space. So about a year ago, a little over a year ago, we bought a building in Reisterstown, Maryland, historic Reisterstown, right up the hill from Sagamore Farm, which was an old church. And so we are now in the process of raising money and have enough money to go ahead and get started renovating the building, and we're going to put a library and education center in it. So we will have a reference library, not too dissimilar from Keeneland's library or the Sporting Library in Middleburg. And then we will also have meeting rooms for groups to meet and have educational opportunities, seminars, et cetera. And it really, again, makes certain that Maryland is our association plus the industry has a flag in the ground, has a place to go where we can teach people about what we do here, why we do it, and how we do it.
You know, Keeneland has their library on the property, and I have been there multiple times. It's really cool because you can go back and you can explore the heritage of a specific horse, of a specific farm of a specific owner. You can go back and look everything up. And I think that's going to be so fantastic, Cricket, to be able to have that at your fingertips and to have a place where people can go and really celebrate and learn about the great heritage of Maryland racing.
Well, and Maryland's investing in the tracks here, redeveloping both Pimlico and Laurel. And, so we've just got a lot of really good news about the state recognizing the investment that the horse community makes in our state and the contributions. And so all of it is good news for Maryland. But again, showing off on a day like Breeders' Cup Day to say, okay, these people that have worked so hard have produced horses that are the top of their class, that are champions, national champions, not just Maryland-bred champions. I mean, they'll certainly be Maryland-bred champions, but was just really unbelievable and so welcome and just a really good news for us to reinforce and keep people in this business, get new people in the business. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, well, nothing will give you better advertising than winning a couple of Breeders' Cup races. Maybe a Kentucky Derby. That wouldn't hurt either. But a couple of Breeders' Cup races certainly don't hurt.
Well, no. And so Bob Mancuso bred Catherine Sophia and won the Kentucky Oaks. So, I mean, you know, we've just got a lot of high-profile people that don't seek the limelight. You know, they don't go out there and seek it, but their horses are showing, you know, are speaking for them, I guess. And we want to continue that. And the only way, we've got to get younger people, new people, the next generation of Merrimans, Katie's family are all in with this training. And, you know, that's what we love to see. And I think that, again, going back to the difference between Maryland and some other states, we have several multi-generational families who are in this business and still in it after a long time. The Ponses, the Bonifaces, they all have farms. They're dedicated to trying to encourage people to get in the business and reward the people who are already also in the business.
You want to attract new fans. Just put Mike Pons out there in front of the camera and let him roll. He's the greatest.
Yeah, no. And we need that. We need to get people back to the tracks and, you know, fans at the track too. I'm a little concerned with the COVID stuff, you know, that we need to not all be sitting home and watching it on TV as I was on Saturday, because I think it's so important for everyone to hear the roar of the crowd and see the happy faces. So that's also one of our missions, to get people out to see horses race in person. We do it a lot here in Maryland with steeplechase racing, and we just had a big 5-star 3-day event at Fair Hill. So there's just all kinds of good news going on here with horses in Maryland.
Now, there certainly is, and Cricket Goodall is at the top of that and leading the charge. She is the executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. She is this week's Industry Star of the Week, but as you heard her say when I welcomed her to the show, she can't do it alone. She doesn't do it alone. It takes a team. It takes a village, and things are moving in the right direction. They have been for a long time in Maryland. And Cricket, it is always a delight to catch up with you. Congratulations on being this week's Industry Star of the Week. And that goes to you and to the entire team there at the Maryland Horse Breeders Association.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for all you do, because you really give us a forum to talk about what we do. And we need that. We need it, you know, everywhere we can get it. And so you offer that, and I really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure. Keep up the wonderful work, and congratulations on a tremendous Breeders' Cup.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, Cricket Goodall here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When I come back, I'll get you ready for the second hour of the program. That kicks off with Byron King from Blood Horse. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Right now, we all might feel a little disconnected. For seniors living alone with smaller social circles, feelings of loneliness and isolation can feel overwhelming. But there's something we can all do to help. Connect with your older loved one virtually and have the conversation of a lifetime with StoryCorps Connect. Anyone can conduct an interview, and every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history. Connect, honor, share at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
This is jockey Julian Lopau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Marsh Lorraine is coming with Royal Flag on the outside. Clarier is unleashing from the back of the pack. Latruska's dropped out of it. It's not Latruska today. As they come to the top of the stretch, it is Marsh Lorraine, Royal Flag, and Clarier on the far outside. Marsh Lorraine trying to go for a giant upset. On the far outside, it's Clarier trying to come through an opening on his inside late. Here comes Dunbar Road. They're coming to the wire. And it is. Oh, it's desperately close. Was it Marsh Lorraine or was it Dunbar Road in the Breeders' Cup Distaff?
Huge race by Dunbar Road. Bigger race by Marsh Lorraine, one of two Japanese runners to get the victory on Breeders' Cup Day. And it was spectacular last Saturday. Congratulations to all those connections. For Latruska, not her day. Many people thought that she was, certainly the one to beat in there after what she had done here in 2021, but not meant to be. These horses are not machines. We saw that with Jackie's Warrior. We saw that with Gamin. We saw that with Tarnawa. Just not their day. They didn't fire. They didn't show up on the big stage, and that's fine because they've shown up and they owe nothing to anybody after what they've done throughout their career. So congratulations to all the winning connections last weekend at Breeders' Cup. Going to get tell you what's ahead here in hour number two and hour number three. But first, I do want to remind you, by the way, happy opening day of rifle season for white-tailed deer here in Kentucky. This is opening day. It'll go for a couple of weeks now. And if you need to get some last-minute supplies to go out and hunt, all you have to do is go to Whitetail Heaven Outfitters, elite outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. I've been telling you about them now for several months on the program. They do a fantastic job. They are just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. And here's the cool part. The store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and they really do have everything you need to hunt deer and turkey, ducks, so much more, whatever it is, even two indoor archery ranges. So if you're thinking about maybe picking up a new bow, you can go in there and test it out and shoot it a few times and see what you think. So it's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. They've got clothing, they've got boots, whatever you're going to need for the upcoming season, which now, as I said, is upon us. All right, hour number two begins momentarily with Byron King from Blood Horse. He will share his thoughts on this year's Breeders' Cup. I'm going to ask him the poll question that's out there. So many of you are taking time to weigh in. Who should be champion three-year-old male in 2021? Is it Medina Spirit? Is it Essential Quality? And then I give you an other category in case you think there could be somebody else, but it's down to those two. You can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or if you don't do the social media thing, simply email me. You can email the show, Mike at horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts. Who should be champion three-year-old male in 2019? I will ask that question of Byron King coming up momentarily. Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne, 9:20 Eastern. I will visit with Carl Woods. You know him better as Dink. That is his nickname. He is the California starting gate crew member that was loaded into the ambulance prior to the running of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf when all hell broke loose before that race. And Dink is so appreciative to be able to walk away from that. It was a very scary situation for him, and he talks about it coming up in this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne, 9:20 Eastern. Michael McCarthy will join me right around 9:40 to look back on CC and that big upset in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. In the Room with Sean Clancy comes up at 10 o'clock Eastern. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History at 10:25. And at 10:30, this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans, turf writer Tim Wilkin. That is all ahead right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Hour two of three on this 13th day of November 2021, 2 days after Veterans Day. My thanks to all of the veterans who have served in this country. What a day to celebrate them 2 days ago, and I hope you did. Byron King going to kick things off for us momentarily. He will look back on the Breeders' Cup. We've been kind of taking a walk back through the Breeders' Cup on this show this morning. Wayne Catalano was fantastic in the first segment of the program. He joined me to look back on Aloha West and that big win in the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Called out Bobby Flay. He's ready to throw down with Bobby Flay, beat Bobby Flay. Cricket Goodall, executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, was with me in that previous segment as well. If you missed any portion of the show, or any of our shows for that matter, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can check out a podcast of this program and all of our shows at your leisure. All of our special segments, including In the Room with Sean Clancy, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin, they are all posted for you individually on our website as well. So we make it very easy for you to listen to the content that you want to listen to. Speaking of content you'll want to listen to, Trainer Talk this past Wednesday, presented by Fasig Tipton, was really an interesting and a really cool show. I welcomed George Leonard III, spent an hour with George. Now, if that name is not familiar to you, George appeared in his first Breeders' Cup this year with California Angel, who ran in the Juvenile Phillies Turf. He was outstanding and very appreciative of everything that has come his way. He's trained for 30 years. He finally won his first graded stakes race, the Jesmond Stakes at Keeneland with California Angel. That catapulted him onto his first Breeders' Cup, and he talked about that experience. And he was so appreciative just to be there with his wife and his family. That hour-long conversation is up on our website now. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton with George Leonard III. Do not miss it. And if you're going to bet the races this weekend, check out the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. That podcast is up on our website as well to get you ready to bet the races. Byron King is with Blood Horse. He is with me now here on HRRN. Byron, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you, sir?
Doing extremely well. Kind of looking back on the Breeders' Cup on this Saturday morning, 1 week removed from what was a Breeders' Cup, I think it's safe to say that none of us are ever going to forget.
Yes, it had a lot of highlights. One low light, I suppose, you know, with the juvenile turf scratch, and then a premature scratch that ended up with a horse running for purse money only, but then, you know, a dramatic Saturday with some highlight performances and thankfully some very safe racing too.
This interview, by the way, presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Byron, the poll question that I have out there this morning is, who will be named champion three-year-old male here in 2021. And I've given listeners a couple of choices. Medina Spirit, of course, essential quality, of course, and then an other category if somebody thinks it's somebody other than those two. It comes down to those two, though, doesn't it?
It does. And I honestly don't think it will be very close. I think essential quality will win pretty handily.
Really?
I think that, yeah, I really do. I think it's for a combination of things. I think not only his body of work over the whole year, but I think in addition, the cloud that still hangs over the Kentucky Derby, and for that matter, Medina Spirit, I think that while there is no doubt that Medina Spirit is a very good horse and that he finished in front of essential quality in those two key races, there is a high probability that he will be disqualified from the Kentucky Derby because of his post-race positive. And I think that will, you know, make things really difficult in the eyes of voters, I think, to make him champion.
See, that's very interesting because I took the opposite approach there. I think it's Medina Spirit, and I do have a vote. And to me, my vote's going to go to Medina Spirit because of the fact that we probably won't have that final Derby decision by the time we have to cast those votes in the next month, month and a half. And I don't want to penalize the horse and assume that he will be disqualified, even though the rules of racing here in Kentucky say that he's supposed to be. And I don't know why, if it was going to happen, it hasn't happened to this point. But I don't want to penalize the horse. And I think that the fact that he and Essential Quality have a very similar resume, and the fact that Medina Spirit has beaten him twice now head-to-head, or finished in front of him twice head-to-head, and has a win over older horses, I really hate to penalize the horse for an infraction by his trainer. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I hear exactly what you're saying, and I understand that point of view. I think at the same time, and this is how I have often viewed these things, is, you know, if we compare what's going on with Medina Spirit with, say, another sport, you know, there are rules that are in place that are meant to be followed. And if someone in a basketball game is shooting a three-pointer but steps narrowly over the line, it's a two-pointer. It doesn't count. It's simply those are the rules. Did it matter too much that the guy was 3 inches over the line? Probably not. He probably makes the shot no matter what. But at the same time, those are the rules in place. And I would be stunned if he weren't disqualified just when if you have as precedence, you know, Gamine, who Baffert also trained, tested positive for the same drug in the Kentucky Oaks when she was third the previous year, and she was ultimately disqualified. So I would be really surprised unless, you know, the stewards view it as some kind of extenuating circumstances. For, you know, your listeners, just to briefly recap the whole Medina Spirit saga, you know, Baffert says that he was treating the horse for a skin condition and used a cream that contained betamethasone, and hence that positive test. Whereas in Gamine's case, he said that she received an injection, which is the typical way that horses get this medication. It's an anti-inflammatory that has, you know, some pain-killing properties. And when you have an injection, it's supposed to be 14 days out before a race. And in that case, Baffert said the horse got it, I think it was 18 days out, if my memory serves me right, and it just simply didn't clear her system. So that's what he said regarding Gamine the previous year. But I just think that whole thing and the probability in my eyes of him being disqualified tips the balance in Essential Quality's favor.
Yeah, be interesting to see how this all plays out. And there are two schools of thought. There will be people on both sides of the fence, which is why we asked the poll question here this morning. All right, let's talk about this year's Breeders' Cup and some of the moments that are going to stand out to you. There were some fantastic performances, Byron. There were the moments like the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf where everybody was up in arms over the decision that was made and the miscommunications and the way that the ball was dropped there. So what are some of the moments and the things that are going to stand out to you about this year's event?
Well, clearly that was what the big standout of Friday. I mean, I was buried in work writing up the juvenile, which came this year uniquely before the juvenile turf. And there was all this drama at the gate. And then, I mean, the boos rained down upon that horse, Modern Games returning to the head to the winner's circle and running for purse money only. And bettors were not only so frustrated if they bet, you know, win, play, show in that race, but if you bet pick fours and pick fives and pick sixes, you know, you got substituted the post-time favorite who naturally lost, and you ended up eating your tickets. And, for bettors that had a lot at stake at that, that was just really such a unfortunate outcome, you know, made by a premature scratch by one of the vets that was there. They had a larger staff on call because of Breeders' Cup, and too many cooks in the kitchen was how they described it. But once we turned the page on Friday, you know, I thought that racing on Saturday was outstanding. I mean, Life Is Good just flew out of there and blew their doors off. I mean, that's a horse that, while I don't think he'll win champion three-year-old just on pure talent, you could make a case that he is perhaps the best three-year-old in North America. He obviously beat Medina Spirit earlier in the year, you know, if we were to just compare head-to-head meetings. But, obviously he didn't run in the major races such as the Triple Crown or the Classic, but whew, man, he was outstanding in the dirt mile, and Beer and the Turf was a thriller. I mean, that came down to a really dramatic late finish. The Distaff was fast-paced. They all took turns ganging up on Latruska, and you had just this giant bomb. And then Japan's success, I mean, obviously the winner of the Distaff, but not just that, Love's Only You, who won the Philly and Mare Turf. It had it all. I mean, it really just had it all, and it was certainly a very memorable and fulfilling Breeders' Cup, the juvenile turf fiasco notwithstanding.
Yeah, there were a lot of ways to go, and you're right, there was something for everyone at this year's Breeders' Cup. You had favorites winning, favorites getting beat, long shots winning like Marsh Lorraine, and Japan having that huge day. I asked the question in my open, you know, is it time that we start taking the Japanese runners a bit more seriously when they come over here? Because coming into this race, it was almost an automatic cross-off. And that's not a disrespect to Japan and their program. It's the fact that they hadn't really performed all that strongly. And then this year, here they jump up and they win two races. It was really well done by them.
It was. And I have to admit that, you know, I did not see the Distaff winner coming. Her form did not shine quite to the same extent that Love's Only You's did. Now, Love's Only You was quite accomplished. I mean, she'd won a major international race in Hong Kong as well. She traveled to the Middle East, was only beaten a half length by Mishriff, one of the top-ranked older horses in the world, who won the Saudi Cup, among other major races on grass as well. So her form was very established, and you know, clearly, I think she was around 4-1 or something like that, and she was one of the favorites. And boy, that was just an outstanding race. I mean, Warlike Goddess from the United States ran a great race. She really circled the field wide, and Love's Only You was kind of boxed in. She found room and she surged late, and it was a thriller. And it was great to see this international participation from Japan and from, you know, the European connections that we've seen over the years, because nothing will bring people back more like success. You can recruit all you want, but when you see that people have gone before you and they've done well, it's easier to make that trip. And I think we've seen that on the United States front by, you know, Wesley Ward's success in Royal Ascot. Owners and other connections are just much more keen to want to send horses over there because, hey, they're like, this can be done. And so, it'll be outstanding if we can see more and more Japanese horses. And because of the influence of these Japanese horses, they rarely simulcast international races over there. Only there's a select, you know, dozen or so a year, but they took like three races from over there and, you know, bet $11 million on those three races. Hong Kong bet on two and bet another $3 million. And those are big numbers and the kind of returns that the Breeders' Cup officials wanted to see.
I'm talking with Byron King from Blood Horse here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Looking back on Friday and Saturday, Breeders' Cup 2021. Byron, you said you were writing an article on the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and that was Corniche and his wire-to-wire victory for Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, who now equals, by the way, his good friend Dwayne Lucas for most wins all time in the Juvenile. Corniche would have already banked 30 points toward a spot in the starting gate of the Kentucky Derby next year. He is the winter book favorite now. He is likely to be the horse everybody has their eyes on going into 2022. But owner Peter Fleur is going to have to make some hard decisions here if indeed he does want to continue down that road to the Kentucky Derby with this horse.
Right. It's a tricky situation. And what's even more remarkable is the fact that this horse is still the Kentucky Derby favorite, even though he doesn't have any points. So
yeah,
clearly, at least among bettors, there's that belief that the horse could either end up in another barn and qualify, or that the rules might be changed and Baffert would be allowed to run. Baffert, of course, has been barred at Churchill Downs Incorporated track through the spring meet at Churchill Downs of 2023, and they are not allowing him to have his horses earn points in their Road to the Kentucky Derby series. So as a result, this horse has zero, and Papa Cap, who was the runner-up in the Juvenile, is actually first. And now, all that said, clearly there's many more points at stake when they get into the three-year-old series. So, for example, you know, a horse can earn 50 points like that late in the game to qualify for the, you know, any number of these kind of major preps, or sometimes even more than 50. So it won't be hard for this horse to, presumably, you wouldn't think it'd be hard, for him to earn enough points to qualify if he were good enough to win one of the major three-year-old preps coming in. But, you know, in talking to those owners, which is Speedway Stables that they run under, there's two gentlemen that head it, you know, they wanted to try to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and they wanted to become champion three-year-old, and they spent $1.5 million on Corniche, and they felt the best path to get there was with Bob Baffert, and they have a sense of, they like him, they have a sense of loyalty with him, and so they weren't going to mess with it this year. Now, what they decide to do next year, I think, will be an interesting call, and it will be one that I'll be following up on, and I'm sure many people as well, on seeing what they plan to do. You know, could they potentially skip the Kentucky Derby and stay with Baffert, or would they switch to another trainer? And at what point would you do that? You know, would you want to do it late in the game and put all your eggs in one basket, or would you do it earlier in the year? You know, they've got some decisions to make for sure.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. It is uncharted waters, certainly, from what we've seen in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And Peter Fleur is going to have to make some tough calls going forward. We'll see how this all plays out. Byron, listen, man, I really appreciate the visit. It's been great to catch up, and always good to hear your voice here on the show. All the best, and thanks for taking the time here this morning.
My pleasure, Mike. You be well, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, you too. Byron King, Blood Horse, here on HRRN. Yeah, he's fantastic. Does a great job. Head over there and read all of his columns and all the pieces he puts together. That interview, by the way, presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. And don't forget that whether you are a jockey, an owner, a trainer, or a horse player, there is always an opportunity to refresh and reset with every loss, and certainly a reason to rejoice with every win. Jellyfish Water is a bottle of inspiration, a set of principles, and a state of mind. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. All right, when I come back, it is time to welcome in Carl Dink Woods for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. It is fascinating. One you will not want to miss. It's the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
To the final furlong. Jackie's Warrior is given way. Special Reserve, here's Aloha West. Flying down the center of the track. Here's the wire. Oh, it's close. Aloha West may have run down Dr. Shevel at the end.
Aloha West, the son of Darley Stallion, Hard Spun, stormed home from well off the pace for an ultra game victory in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Sprint this Saturday. A winning effort that makes him, your Darley, Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Hard Spun is Danzig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more first crop stakes winners than any other stallion before him. Hard Spun is now the sire of 15 Grade 1 winners lifetime, a list which also includes 2021 Met Mile winner Silver State. Learn more about Hard Spun and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon, oftentimes thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion!
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, as I tell you every single time, I welcome you to this Unsung Heroes segment that the sport of thoroughbred racing is filled with unsung heroes. And it got me thinking about the occurrences prior to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf last Friday that provided plenty of controversy, which will be talked about for weeks to come. But it was somewhat overshadowed, or at least one thing that became overshadowed because of all that controversy, was the member of the starting gate crew that was taken off the track by ambulance. And his name is Carl Woods. He's better known around the racetrack as Dink. And he, along with his fellow starting gate crew members, epitomize what this Unsung Heroes segment is all about. Dink, first of all, welcome to the program and congratulations on being named this week's Unsung Hero.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it is a true privilege to welcome you to the show. First off, how are you feeling?
I feel a lot better.
Yeah, so many people were watching that, myself included, and it's never fun to see somebody escorted from the starting gate and walked into an ambulance. That's never good.
No, not at all.
No. Walk me through what happened prior to the start of that race that led to the injuries.
Well, first of all, we went to take the hood off the earmuffs off the horse, and he wanted to flip. And then Frankie got off, and we put the hood on him, a blindfold, and then loaded him up. And they wanted to wait till the last horse was almost in. And I looked back to see how many horses were still left out. And then he decided his fuse was short enough, so he blew up inside there and got over the front doors. And I tried to keep him to me, make sure my jock got out okay, and then he slammed into me and pushed my back into the bar and then went down, and the bridle come off, and I was paralyzed. It felt like I was absolutely paralyzed. I could not move. And after that, it was just kind of a whirlwind of stuff that happened, which I'm sure you've seen.
Yeah, what a scary moment. And it was, what, a lower back injury and then an injury to your right hand?
Yes, sir. My lower back and right hand. And the hand was numb from trying to hold on to him after he jerked those little thin reins out of my hand. But everything's good. We're all right.
You know, I've always said for many years on this program that working on the starting gate is one of the more dangerous jobs on the racetrack. And I'm sure you would agree.
Yes, sir, I would.
What is it about that job that does make it so dangerous?
Well, you got to figure in an iron contraption that's very narrow. You're standing on a little 6-inch ledge. And your main job is to make sure the rider's okay if something happens, then the horse, then you. And that's just the way the order is. Rider, horse, then you. And you're looking at a 1,000-pound animal in a little bitty narrow space, and if they decide they don't want to be there, Superman's not going to hold them in there.
Yeah.
So you do the best you can and hope for the best.
Wow. So as you're laying there, you said you thought, oh, my goodness, I'm paralyzed. You couldn't move. And then they lead you into the ambulance. What things were going through your mind? Were you conscious the whole time?
I was worried. I was conscious the whole time. I was worried about my jock. I wanted to, you know that he was okay. And I kept thinking to myself, man, I hope this isn't the end. You know? That's what I thought. Just hope my rider's okay, and I hope this isn't the end. Something serious was wrong, but everything turned out okay.
Well, thank goodness it did, and I'm assuming that you'll be back to work before too long?
I'll be back tomorrow morning.
Okay, so I ask jockeys this question a lot when they come back from an injury, and I say, what on earth makes you want to get back on the horse? What makes you want to get back in the starting gate with the horse?
That's my job. I mean, this is my 41st year of doing it. I like my job. I like what I do. A lot of people, you know, they don't like their jobs. They just go and work and they go home. But you develop a bond with the guys on the gate, the trainers, the jockeys especially. They're like family. And you want to take care of them. And I don't know what else to say. It's just a bond.
Wow, you mentioned 40-plus years of doing this, Dink. Pretty impressive. Walk me through your background. How did you first get started in racing, and what things led you to eventually working on the starting gate?
Well, I have two uncles that rode races. My Uncle Mel was the oldest active jock in the nation at one time. My mother rode races, my grandmother rode races, and my father rode races. And then I rode later on, and when I got too big, I needed to find a job to do. So a gentleman called me up, asked me if I wanted to work the gates, because when I was riding, on my off time, I'd go mess around with the gate crew all the time, because I knew they were the ones that were going to save me if something happened. So I always wanted to be on their good side. And anyways, I started working the gate of April of 1980, and it just went on from there. I've been very fortunate to be able to work the gate in a lot of different places. And then in 1996, I started coming out to California, and it's all worked out very well for me.
I love to hear you talk about the relationship that you had as a jockey with the starting gate crew members. Touch on that a little bit. Your role now being on the gate, you're working with the riders, you're working with the horses. How does it all come together when the horse starts to load? Walk me through the process.
Oh, well, you know, we get assigned a horse, and then we go out there and pick him up, and we have I usually chat with the jocks, and if I don't know the horse, I'll usually ask them, or they'll tell me before I even load up, hey, watch him. He's a little bad, or, you know, something like that. And we'll load up, and then while the other horses are loading, I'll set the horse and ask him. I always ask the jock, how's he feel? Does he feel good? And if they say yes, and we won't move him. If they say no, and we need to move him up, I'll do that. Anything to make sure they get out of there okay. And it's worked out that way for me for years. And so it's a good system for me and the rider.
Do you have a couple of favorite riders that you enjoy working with?
Oh, yeah. Sure, we all do. I really like working with Tyler Bays and Kent DeSormo. Frankie Dettori, what a character. Great guy. And I've always got along with like Mike Smith, Russell Bays, Gary Stevens, Scott Stevens. Almost most of the guys I get along with very well. Joe Bravo, there's another guy. There's a good guy right there, Joe Bravo.
He's the greatest.
Most of the guys are, he's great. He is great, but... the first guys, you know, that I said about is they're the ones I really like taking care of.
Yeah, that relationship is so special. And I imagine, too, Dink, that you over time you get to know the habits and the intricacies of every rider, and that helps to make it a little bit easier, too, right?
Yes, sir, it does. I mean, once you figure out what they like and what they don't like, you know, you try to do everything that they like. And most of the time, like Tyler, we'll load something up and if something's getting bad, he just tells me, hey, you do what you got to do. I'm just here to ride him. You do what you got to do to get him out. So, and a lot of the riders are like that, and that's really good. They don't, they want to be safe, just like I want to be safe. And we do that to make sure we have a good break and everybody's safe. That's the main thing.
What's the number one most important thing that you have to do when that horse steps into the gate?
Well, my biggest deal when I go in is that I want to make sure my horse is squared up. He's going to leave good. Not his legs not crossed or a leg hanging out the back or anything like that. I want to make sure he's standing up on all 4 feet and get a good break. That's my biggest deal right there.
I can imagine that after doing this for 40-plus years that this isn't the first time you've had to deal with a few injuries.
No, I've had a couple of knee surgeries, and your fingers get bent, you get knocked around a little bit, but, you know, just bruised up, but nothing really bad. I mean, my knees, but now... This is not even really bad. I mean, it's just a big, bad bruise in my lower back. Bone bruise is what the lady said. But it'll go away. Everything will be fine.
Yeah, visiting with this week's unsung hero, Carl Woods. He goes by Dink. Most people know him as Dink around the racetrack because you told me, Carl, that it's because you were always so small growing up, right?
Yes, sir. 5 pounds, some ounces at birth. I've always been a little guy.
Well, you're a big man when those horses step into the starting gate. And I love the fact that you talked about the relationship that you have with the other starting gate crew members, that it becomes like a family and you're all watching out for each other. I mean, heck, you're out there in all different types of weather conditions every day. And it has to become like a family.
Well, it has to be, because sometimes if a guy's in trouble and you can help him, you reach and get a hold of the horse on the opposite side of you if he's in trouble and give the guy a hand. That's just normal about anywhere you go. You got to save each other's butts in there. And, you know, it's like you say, we're family. We all go out sometimes together. We eat, barbecue, whatever, and go play cards at each other's houses or whatever. But we watch out for each other, and that's a big thing. You've got to be able to trust a man next to you. And I have not been anywhere that I've really never had to trust anybody, you know. You always you can rely on the person next to you, and that's a big help. It really is.
It sounds to me like an offensive line in football where they say that the cohesion is so important, and the good offensive lines, they all work together as one unit. And can you say the same thing about the starting gate crew?
Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't realize that I like to put us in the same category as a professional athlete. And because of what we do, and you're in a professional sport to begin with, we like to consider ourselves professionals of what we do, because there's not a lot of us out there. If you really look at the numbers, there's not a whole lot of gate crew across the nation. If you look at Europe, most of the time those guys are left in the gate by themselves, or in Japan. When I was in Japan, I seen the same thing. They duck underneath, and them guys are in there by themselves. And most of the European riders that come over here, sometimes the trainer wants them to be in there by themselves, and you go to get out, and the jock's yelling out, "You don't leave me. Stay here with me." They like that extra comfort that somebody's there to help them if something goes bad. So I put us as professionals. We're athletes ourselves. And that's the way I look at the gate crew.
Yeah, athletes who put themselves in harm's way every single time the horses load into the gate. And it happens an awful lot over the course of the year. And that's why I do believe that every starting gate crew member is a true unsung hero. And seeing what you went through, so many people watched you be loaded into the ambulance after that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, or actually before the race, when all the chaos broke before the race. And man, I'm just so thankful that you're okay, Carl, and man, a true unsung hero in my book.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, no, my pleasure, and really appreciate you taking some time to be with me on this segment. Before I let you go, if someone comes to you and tells you they want to work on the starting gate, what do you tell them?
Well, the first thing I'd like to ask them is, you ever done anything with a horse? Because most of the gate crew that I know have either been a groom or exercise rider, something like that. And it helps a lot if you have some, we call it horse sense. You got to have a little bit of horse sense. But we've had guys that come on the gate that's never even, you know, really never knew nothing about a horse, and they've worked out pretty well, because we're there, the older guys, like myself, that try to teach guys to do it the right way. And I always look at it this way. A horse is just like a human. They only know what you teach them. You teach them right, then things go good.
Yeah, very well said. Carl Dink Woods, this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. Carl, all the best moving forward, my friend. I'm glad you're okay, and can't wait to see you back out there again.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate that.
All right. Carl Woods, this week's unsung hero. And, boy, he is a true unsung hero. That was scary watching him loaded into the ambulance. And, again, thankfully he is okay. He'll be back to work, as you heard him say, very, very soon, and be back reunited with his starting gate family. I'm back right after this word from Claiborne Farm.
Undefeated Grade 1 winner Mastery was a multiple graded stakes winner at 2, including this victory in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity. At 3, he sizzled in the San Felipe Stakes. Now his progeny are bringing top dollar in the sales ring, and his first runners are hitting the track. Mastery, standing at Claiborne Farm.
When I come back, I'll continue to talk Breeders' Cup. We're going to try to get a hold of Michael McCarthy, the man who trained CeCe to win the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint in that upset over Gamine. Nobody saw that one coming, except for Michael McCarthy and his team. I'll talk to him next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Juxtapose, a four-year-old daughter of Verrazano, goes after her first added money win in Saturday's Grade 2 $175,000 Bessarabian Stakes at Woodbine. The 7-furlong main track feature for fillies and mares 3-year-olds and up has drawn 9 starters, including Juxtapose. Trained by Steve Owens, the Kentucky bred heads into her second straight stakes date after notching a third in the Grade 3 Ontario Matron on October 10th. That effort came after a 7-furlong grass win, the 6th of her career. The Dark Bay brings a record of 6-0-3 from 13 starts into the Bessarabian for owners James Redekop and Stefan Ferrario. Trainer Roger Atfield and Kinghaven Farms teamed to win the first 2 editions of the Bessarabian in 1985 with Summer Mood and 1 year later with Playlist. Conditioner Josie Carroll, she's had a lot of success too. She won 3 runnings of the Bessarabian, including in 2017 and 2018, both with Moonlit Promise. Also on Saturday, 10 older fillies and mares will travel a mile and a quarter on the Tapita in the Grade 3 $150,000 Maple Leaf Stakes, which was inaugurated in 1892. Starters include the Mark Cassie-trained foursome of Art of Almost, Broadway Lady, Crystal Glacier, and Sky Gaze, while Grand Motion will send out Sister O'Toole. The Bessarabian is carded as race 8 on the 11-race program. The Maple Leaf goes as race 7. First post later today, 12:55 p.m. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And they're into the stretch, and CC is coming too. Gamin has been passed by CC. CC has taken the lead, going by Gamin. Then comes Edgeway on the inside, and Bella Sofia. It's an upset here. It's CC and Victor Espinosa by 3 on the wire. Edgeway was second. Gamin had to settle for third. Bella Sofia was fourth in 121 flat.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. CC winning the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint, upsetting Gamin and everybody else. Trained by Michael McCarthy, who joins me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Busy morning for Michael, so we'll only keep him a few minutes. Michael, appreciate the conversation, my friend.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Congratulations on that big win.
Thank you.
Yeah, what a special filly, huh?
Very special. Like I said on last Saturday, she's good. She's always been good. I'm glad she went ahead and vindicated herself. You know, I thought people got a little bit down on her last year after the Apple Blossom. She just kind of never got back to it. We ran her on a couple of racetracks that I thought were suspect, deep and loose. She didn't like. I tried wheeling her back to 7/8 in the Derby City Distaff, and I thought she ran okay. Her Breeders' Cup Distaff race is actually better than looked fifth that day. We came back this year, and I just had in my mind that maybe we just try keeping her around one turn, especially out here in California where these racetracks have gotten just a little bit slower and a bit more demanding.
When you come into a race like this and you're facing Gamin, who most people thought was unbeatable, what was your mindset and your approach with CeCe?
Just looking at the numbers, I thought Gamin was good. I didn't think she was unbeatable. By and large, in a couple of races, she's had everything her own way. She's obviously very fast and very talented, but when she's got no one to run with her and things get dictated, you know, she dictates the pace. She's been pretty tough to beat. Saturday showed up, Bella Sofia, good 3-year-old filly, similar style. They both went ahead, went went at it like they're supposed to do. And, you know, I don't know what else to say other than the race shaped up like it was supposed to on paper. We ran like we were supposed to. I can't speak about the other two.
Yeah, yeah, and Victor did a fantastic job with CeCe.
We planned on just jumping away from there and trying to keep things honest early. The way things kind of worked out is that everybody kind of, the two inside horses went inside, the two outside horses went outside. We were kind of left in the middle of the racetrack by ourselves. Victor did a great job in being able just to go ahead and track the leaders, wheeled out around the 3/8 pole. And around the 3/8 pole, it looked like she was kind of going a little bit one paced at the time. And he said he was just trying to time it where he didn't get to the front too early. So all kudos to Victor for being, you know, the Hall of Fame rider that he is.
Michael, I know you're training this morning, so again, I won't keep you. One last question before I let you go. What a year, huh? Rombauer wins the Preakness. CeCe takes the Filly and Mare Sprint. Just put into words what this has been like.
Yeah, we've had two weekends that have been, you know, out of this world for us. Obviously, kind of following it up on the heels of City of Light, and to be able to come back with two horses like this and win a Breeders' Cup race with a homebred, win an American Classic with a homebred, pretty special. You know, it just goes to show all around, people that are small commercial breeders can have plenty of success in this game. Bo Hirsch, John and Diane Fracton, big, you know, that's a big feather in their caps for being persistent and keeping at it. You know, I can't say enough about my guys that help me every day. That do all the heavy lifting. So it's been a pretty, it's been a great year all around. I like to say we'll have more of these, but if we don't, we certainly aren't lost on the fact that it's been one that's kind of, I don't know, I don't have the right expression to say it, but it's been crazy just looking back on it.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Smooth Like Straight too. What an effort by that horse, huh?
Yeah, that one stung pretty good. I walked out of the paddock. I saw he was 16-1. I had mentioned to someone that that price is crazy on a horse like him. He got a little bit of action late. I really thought he was ready to fire a big one, and he did. He did. It just it took a superstar to beat him.
Well, what a year for Michael McCarthy. Michael, appreciate the quick visit here this morning. Keep it rolling and get back to work.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
Michael McCarthy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Really appreciate that. He squeezed that interview in for us in between training horses out in California. So I'm sure he was standing there with the next set ready to go out, or that maybe he was on the racetrack. But greatly appreciate his time. And congratulations to him and to the connections of CeCe. And he mentioned that the race set up the way it was supposed to. We talked about that on our coverage on Saturday afternoon. And Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four, who was sitting in with Bobby Newman as part of our broadcast team, before the race, Jude talked about the fact that Gamine very well could get some pace pressure on the front end. And if that were to happen, the horse that figured to benefit from that most was CeCe, because CeCe had good tactical speed, could be in a good position under Victor Espinoza. And when you look at, and people who listen to this show know that I'm a huge fan of the Brisnet late pace numbers. When you look at the late pace numbers for CeCe, she can really finish. And if she gets a good trip, and if Mike McCarthy just said, Gamine has had things her own way in a lot of her races, that didn't happen on Saturday. And Jude Feld tabbed that exact scenario, much like Mike McCarthy just said. Michael McCarthy, he prefers Michael. But much like he just said, the race played out the way it looked like it would on paper. That doesn't happen every time. But the stars aligned for CeCe, got the perfect trip in behind the leaders, and just outfinished them. And you know, last week, during our I Ask, They Answer segment, I asked Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin, what would be a bigger surprise? Gamine getting beat in the Filly and Mare Sprint, or Tarnawa losing as the heavy favorite in the Breeders' Cup turf, and they both agreed that it was Gamine. Well, I don't know if anybody saw both horses going down. Maybe some of you did. Maybe you played against both of them. Gamine certainly looked like a good thing in there. And Tarnawa figured, well, she kind of towered over that field in the Breeders' Cup turf, but it wasn't her day either. And like I said, when I was talking about Latruska, these horses are, they're just not machines. And every race is a different scenario. Makes you appreciate the horses that have come along over the years, like a Zenyatta, who was so remarkably brilliant and so remarkably consistent. Like a Cigar and everything that he accomplished in his career. Although you never would have heard of him if Holy Bull stayed healthy, but that's a whole other discussion. But you think about that particular race, the Filly and Mare Sprint, and the way it set up, it was perfect. Smooth Like Straight from Michael McCarthy ran lights out in the Breeders' Cup Mile, and you heard him say that one stung a little bit. That was tough because this horse ran his eyeballs out, really didn't deserve to lose, but somebody has to. Only one horse, one set of connections, walks away happy at the end of a race. But congratulations to Michael and to the team. Fantastic stuff. Speaking of the Filly and Mare Sprint division, you have a good one today at Churchill Downs. The Dream Supreme, a $300,000 stake, which, by the way, is the reason that Bell's the One, winner of the Grade 2 Thoroughbred Club of America at Keeneland last time out, did not go to the Breeders' Cup for Neil Pessin. When Neil joined me on the show after that win, he told us, you heard him say it right here on the Equine Forum, he said that there were a couple of concerns, the main being the transportation getting out there to California. So many of the trainers talked about the fact that there is no Tex Sutton anymore to fly your horses, so you have to fly them FedEx. Neil Pessin laid out the reasons why that was problematic for Bell's the One. So they opted to pass on the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Whether she would have beaten Cece, who knows? But she's another one that has that off-the-pace running style and can really finish. Her late pace numbers are very, very strong. Maybe Bell's the One would have been the one. And I would have been welcoming Neil Pessin to the show today. Who knows? But they opted not to. They run in the Dream Supreme. And that race at Churchill today is really good. It's a 7-horse field, but it's a quality 7-horse field. For a post-Breeders' Cup race, you think, okay, the best Filly and Mare sprinters in the game ran in the Breeders' Cup. Maybe. Yeah, I mean, those were really top-notch. But Bell's the One is no slouch. Sconson, who is second choice on the morning line in that Dream Supreme later today, is no slouch. Both of them love Churchill Downs. They've taken turns throughout the year kind of trading punches. Sconson beat Bell's the One in the Open Mind at Churchill back in September. Bell's the One returned to take that Grade 2 Thoroughbred Club of America at Keeneland in her most recent outing, beating Club Car, who is back in this race again, and is 4-1, third choice. Good race, really strong race. And then you throw in Frank's Rocket, not quite sure if she's fast enough, but she has a little bit more early gas than Bell's the One, a little bit more early gas than Sconson, and even Club Car for that matter. So if she clears, she may become dangerous in there. But LZ will keep her honest on the front end. At least you have to think so. But that's race number 10 at Churchill today. Goes off at 5:36 Eastern, 2:36 out on the West Coast. 6 furlongs on the main track, and figures to be a really good one. All right, when I come back, going to take a look at some historical dates in racing history and then get you ready for the third hour of the program, which is really busy. Some great content coming up. So stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses
by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those.
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs a water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life, and it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, getting ready to segue into the third hour of the show, which begins, of course, as we do every week, with In the Room with Sean Clancy. This week, he sits down with jockey Arnaldo Boca Chica, which should be a lot of fun. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History comes your way at 10:25, and at 10:30, I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. That has quickly become one of the more popular segments here on the program as they debate back and forth. If you do have any question that you would like them to debate, any topic at all, you can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, or you can tweet to us each week at HRN on Twitter. You can post it on our Facebook page. If you do Facebook, that's Horse Racing Radio Network. But let me know if you have something, a listener wildcard question, if you will, that you want them to kick around, any kind of topic that you want to hear their opinion on, feel free each week to email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, or hit us up on social media. All right, well, time now to take a look at some historical dates in racing history that have taken place right around this date. Yesterday, November 12th, was the anniversary, how about this, of four-year-old Machine Gun carrying 159 pounds. Which is believed to be the highest impost in a winning effort on the flat. That was at Riccarton in New Zealand. It was November 12th, 1904. The time for the 5-furlong race was 58 seconds flat, carrying 159 pounds. Boy, those days are long gone. November 12th, 1999 is when Alfred Gwynne Vanderbilt, the driving force behind American racing, died in Milneck, New York. He passed away at the age of 87. And November 14th, 1997, jockey Eddie Arcaro, the 1958 Racing Hall of Fame inductee and the only two-time winner of the Triple Crown, died of cancer at his home in Miami at the age of 81. And those are some historical dates in racing history as they pertain to these couple of days here. Don't forget that if you have not already done so, you'll want to weigh in on our poll question this morning at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or email the show. Who should be champion three-year-old male in 2021? Byron King joined me to kick off the second hour of the program at 9 Eastern. We disagreed. He thinks Essential Quality is going to win quite easily. My vote's going to Medina Spirit, I'll tell you right now. I'm not going to penalize the horse for something that, you know, look, if you don't vote for Medina Spirit because of the Kentucky Derby situation, you're saying, yeah, he's definitely being disqualified.
We don't know that yet. If at the time you're casting your vote, he has not been disqualified, he is still the Kentucky Derby winner. If you want to break out a crystal ball, look into the future and say he's definitely coming down, okay. It's probably likely that he does, but we don't know that yet by the time the votes are cast. That's part of the problem. Medina Spirit, Essential Quality, or somebody else, let me know your thoughts on our social media pages or email the show. All right, Hour 3 kicks off momentarily. In the Room with Sean Clancy coming up, Arnaldo Boca Chica, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, and I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Roman's turf writer Tim Wilkin. Right after I pause, 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
To Robbie and Juju's Man battling for second behind a no-doubt champion. Echo Zulu wins the Next Jets Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies by 5.5 lengths. Got Storming is next, and then Ivar on the outside and Casa Creed. They're coming down to the line, and Space Blues has won the Breeders' Cup Mile. Modern Games on the outside, closing that gap, Dakota Gold and Slipstream are next, but it's Modern Games. Modern Games will win the Juvenile Turf.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They're coming past the 16th pole. It's Life Is Good, and this colt is incredible. Life Is Good. Won it by 6 lengths over Ginobili. It's Broom with 1 furlong to run. Yabir is closing on the outside. Broom and Yabir down to the wire. It is Yabir and William Buick to win the turf. Lieutenant Dan trying to make a race of it in second. Emiratiana is third on the inside, but it is Golden Pal. Golden Pal, wire to wire in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Now here's Mike Pena.
The announcer, Larry Colmus, bringing us back for hour number 3, a great Breeders' Cup montage. What a weekend it was, a memorable one for so many reasons. Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Been a very busy morning so far, and it's far from over. Wayne Catalano kicked it off with me. A fun interview with him at the beginning of the program. Cricket Goodall, the executive director of the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, was here. Byron King from Blood Horse, our unsung hero segment, was Carl Dink Woods. That was a really, really fantastic conversation with him. And Michael McCarthy just a short time ago. If you did miss any portion of this show and you want to go back and listen, you can do it via podcast on our website, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. Head over and take a listen to all of our special segments and to all of our shows. They are posted for you on our website to listen to at your leisure. All right, hour number 3 begins, as we always do, with our visit with Sean Clancy. He goes in the room this week with jockey Arnaldo Boca Chica.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Arnaldo Boca Chica. An amazing 8 stakes win foray the other day. Take me through that. What was that like to win 8 stakes on a night?
Yes, that was just an incredible night for me. Like, coming in, I knew I have a lot of good horses and a lot of good chances. So I was hoping for to win 2 or 3, because they all look good. So 2 or 3, I'd be really happy with it. But once I win 3, 4, I was like, wow, look like I'm not getting beat today. And it was a good night.
How'd you lost one? I mean, how'd you lose a couple? You lost one race on the night?
Just one. I mean, that horse, and actually like that horse, he was looking good for the race, but he just couldn't compete with them. He beat them before, but it was like a perfect trip. And this one, it was a little wide, and the favorite got the job on me. And he still run a decent race. He finished 4, but I'm happy with the way he ran.
When does it hit you? I mean, that night after the races. I mean, I know when you're riding that, those kind of races are coming back that fast. But what's it like? I mean, at the end of the night or the next day, you stop and think, wow, I won 8 stakes on a card.
At the end of the night, when I win my last race, coming back, I was talking to my buddy. I told him, man, I wish my dad was here to see the. That was my first thought. It was an unbelievable night. And this, walking back from the last horse, I just couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, I can't believe this just happened. I was amazed for what happened that night.
Where's your dad? Was he watching? I'm sorry.
Yeah. He passed 3 years ago, and he was my biggest fan. Yeah. So that's the only thing I was missing that night. So I hope I'm making proud of there and that he was watching, because, I mean, I did it for him. That was the only thing missing that night. It was him.
That's got to be tough, right? It hits you. Hits you thinking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it really hit me. Like, I actually cry a little after the race because I wish he was here to see what I did that night.
Did he get you started in racing, or how did that start?
Yeah, he was a jockey, okay. And my brother. So saying I was little, I wanted to be a jockey. And the thing is, every year for those races, when he was alive, he used to come and watch me for that night. So that make it even more hard for me that night, because he always come and watch me ride those big nights like that. And to do something like that, and he not being here, it was hard.
So growing up in Puerto Rico, always wanted to be a jockey, or what was that like?
Yeah. In Puerto Rico, to be in jockey school, you have to be 16. So I was really young, I just want to turn 16 so I can go to the jockey school. I have no plans. My only plan was, I'm going to be a jockey, that's it. I don't want to go to school for nothing, I don't want any other job. I'm going to be a jockey. That was my thought my whole life.
And that's following your dad's footsteps to want to do it.
Yeah, my dad and my brother. I look up to a lot to my brother too, so I just want to be like them.
And when did you first start riding? I mean, what kind of horses or ponies, or what was that like at the beginning? Did you ride much before jockey school?
No. I went like for 2 months to a farmer over there in Puerto Rico to start learning. And then just in jockey school, you learn with easy horses over there. Then they let you gallop for trainers. And I actually came here before I graduated and got my license here in Charlestown. Wow.
And what year was that?
2006, in the summer of 2006.
So when you go to the jockey school, you're thinking about guys like John Velasquez and those kind of heroes, Jose Ortiz and Irad Ortiz, right? I mean, those are the guys you're looking... Oh, they're after you. All right, sorry. I got my timeline wrong. But Johnny for sure, right?
For sure, yeah. When you go to jockey school, that's one thing that you know is Johnny Velasquez. He's a Hall of Famer, one of the best over here. So you look up to him a lot. And then I look up to the jockey in Puerto Rico, the leading jockey over there. His name is Juan Carlos Diaz Jr. I mean, Juan Carlos Diaz. And I look up a lot to him and my brother over here. That was my 3 jockeys. And when I came here, I actually started watching Johnny V, and I was like, wow, he's really talented. So that was growing up, John Velasquez, Diaz, and my brother.
So how old were you when you came to America?
I was 18.
And you came straight to Charleston?
Yeah, straight here.
How did you get here? I mean, why Charleston?
The agent, they brought me here. His name is Gerson Rodriguez. He's in Parks now. So he went to Puerto Rico. He looked me in the practice races over there, and he said, you look good, so I think we can do good over there in Charlestown. He know people over here, because he had J.D. Acosta over here before. So he brought me here, and I stay here since.
And what for you, I mean, you're a young kid. You go from Puerto Rico to Charlestown. What kind of an adjustment was that? Was that easy, or what was that like?
It wasn't easy, because first we had to stay with people that I don't know. And then here on the track, I had to work, and I don't know any English. So I was like, I don't know what to do sometimes. He had to be with me most of the time to explain. When he wasn't there, I don't know what to say. So in the beginning, it was a little hard till I started learning the English and learning more to ride here because the track's small. But once everything came together, it was okay for me.
So John Velasquez always tells a story. He was watching Little Mermaid or some cartoon, and that's how he learned how to speak English. Well, how did you learn how to speak English?
Watching TV too, a lot of movies and everything. The dad of my agent, he put me to watch a lot of TV, but with the subtitles, so I can even easier like that. So that's how I learned.
And has it been an easy road? I mean, what's it been like? You're a leading rider year after year at Charlestown. What's it been like? Has it been tough, or what's it been like?
The first few months was a little tough. We actually thought to live here and everything. But then when I started winning, it was a great year. My first year, I was leading rider too. Then the second year, I was our leader B, so I went down. Then when I came back, it took me a few years to get where I am right now. I was like top 5 for a while. Then I partnered with Jeff, and since I'm riding for him, I went to the top.
Yeah, how did you hook up with Jeff Franco? I mean, perennial leading trainer of most of those winners that night. I mean, how did you hook up with him?
Well, he gave me a few opportunities to ride for him. He riding a few horses, and I did good for him. So he asked me to come and work in the morning. He will give me a few horses to ride. And that's how we started. We started doing really good. He gave me more mounts. And right now I ride most of the barn. So I appreciate that for him to pick me to be the rider to ride his horses.
Yeah, he talked about your work ethic coming to the barn and riding out. And when days when he's not there, you come in and make sure you know, you're there all the time. And that's very important, I guess, for your success.
Yeah, one thing that my dad told me too, like, if some you're going to have somebody get mad at you, don't let them to be mad at you because you're lazy. Get up and work. If you work and you're respectful, you'll be successful. So that's what I try to do. I try to work every day. Like, I show up. You can ask Jeff. I show up. If it's raining, I'm here. It's cold, I'm here. I show up. They need me to work, I'll be there to work. Like, it's my business. You know, if I don't do it, maybe somebody else will. And Jeff, he had the best horses. So why not do it for him who had the best horses? So he need me to work, and I'm there. Like he says, sometimes he's not there, and he want me to watch stuff. I do the work for him. Like, and I'm happy with it because I actually like it. I enjoy getting on these horses in the morning, see them from when they're freaking here. They don't know much. Work by work, getting better, and picking up the nice babies and all that stuff. I love it.
So you're part of the team.
Yeah, right now I am. Thank God. I mean, this is a good thing to be a part.
Yeah, for sure. And Jeff was a former jockey. I talked to him earlier today. He talked about how important it is to have a relationship with a jockey like you guys do. It's really important. Same thing for a jockey to have that kind of relationship with a trainer.
Yeah, it is. He understands more about the race. You know, when you make a mistake or whatever, he understands. Like sometimes, like, I want to make a move, but I can, or he wanted me to do something and I said something else. When I come back and explain, he understands better because he used to write. Like, and about the leaving the gate, that's why he helped me a lot with some of those things too. Like, he used to do it. So it's good to have somebody that they know about the actual race that has been in the race. For some people, it's hard when you're over here. So he's been there, so he knows how it goes. So it's good.
Do you ever get mad at you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes sometimes. Hey. And he tell me this is a business, and he have clients that they spend a lot of money with it, so that's why he want me focused all the time. Like, he understand when you can make a mistake, but he understand sometimes, like, you need to be focused. And maybe, like, I went too wide. I waited too long. I don't have the horse ready in the gate. And, you know, he has to respond to these clients. And if I made a mistake, you know, it's on me. But I try to study my races really well and try to not make mistake. If something happened, it had to be something that happens. It wasn't my fault. And he understands why it's not my fault, too. So that's good, too.
Yeah, he said you come to the paddock and you're prepared. You know where the speed is and you know where everything. You've studied the race. That's really important.
Yeah, and that actually came after I started riding for him. I usually, like, study races, but when I started riding because he always want to. He knows, too. He want to make sure you know what you're doing, too. So I go over there and I'm already, like, prepared. I know what I'm doing. I have a few plans already. If this one go, it doesn't go where I'm going to be. So I studied the races a lot, and that's because he told me to be ready for these races, Jeff. So I'm glad to, like, to have somebody like him, like, to make sure I'm ready and focused for these races.
Yeah, I got to say, we just watched the second race on a Wednesday night at Charlestown, and as you were in the gate, he was saying, no, just straighten his head out. Boca, straighten his head out. Now get him off the back doors. Make sure he's paying attention.
Yeah, so all that stuff that he was saying, he told me in the paddock. So I know he's watching, and I know he wants me to do. But the horse, he gets like that sometimes, them keeping relaxed. So I was waiting for the last horse to get in and then put the head straight. Because if I don't, he will, when I come back, he'll be, why you don't have the head straight, you know, stuff like that. He knows the... I know what he wants me to do, so I try to do what I know he likes.
Yeah, he literally said that. I mean, straighten the horse out, and then I could watch you as the last horse in, you straighten his head out. It was wild to watch the two of you kind of, I know you're a distance away, you're in the gate and he's in the grandstand, but it was fascinating to watch the as he was coaching you through that. So you sense what he wants and sense what he wants.
Yeah, it's been more than 5 years and probably 1,000 or more horses that I ride for him, so... And most of the time, the same instruction, you know, just be ready in the gate, he's back, the back of the door, the head straight, make sure he's going to break straight, and take it from there, play it by ear.
And do you ever think about, I mean, Charlestown, there's bigger circuits out there. Do you ever think about moving from here to a bigger circuit? Have you had opportunities like that? Have you thought about stuff like that, started about moving on?
It's always in the back of my head, because I do have a few opportunities that came my way, but I don't feel like none of them were the right one. And the business I have here is really good, too. So for me to live here, it had to be like a really big opportunity, a really nice one. Like a trainer, I prefer a trainer or agent that's really connected, that I know I'm going to go and ride for somebody. Because just to go and try, with the business I have here, it's really hard just to live and to see what happens. Somebody that I know is really well connected, a big barn or something, give me the opportunity, I would like to dress somewhere else.
Yeah, it's got to be on your mind, right? I mean, you think about bigger places. I'm like back to watching the Ortiz brothers and those, you know, and John Velasquez and your mentors, those kind of guys go on to do big things. So I guess the timing is everything. If the opportunity came, you would think about going.
Yeah, if the opportunity came and it's the right one, I feel like I would love to try somewhere else.
What would your dad's be advice for you?
He would tell me, like, take it easy and take it slow. He actually wasn't like a big, like, go to a bigger place. Like, if you're doing good, you're happy, you stay there. It's more like my dream. Like, I would like to be in a place like that. But he was like, if you're happy, you're doing good, your family's fine, don't worry about it. Just be happy.
And is that how his career went? I mean, is that how he kind of, was that his career?
It was like that, but he got hurt really early in his career. So he was more, then he became a trainer and he worked in the whole year. But his career was only like 5-6 years because he got hurt really bad. He couldn't move his arm much. So he just became a trainer. But he like, in the racetrack, you get different opportunities. And he just stayed where he felt he was happy. So, and that's what he told me. You be where you feel like you're happy. And if you're doing, because before he passed, I was doing good by then too. So it's like, you're doing really good over there. So if you're going to leave, make sure it's the right opportunity and it's going to work out.
And what about your brother's career? What have you learned from his career?
He actually did really good too. He was parked for a while early in his career. He did really good there. Then he went to Suffolk down. He did really good there too. He moved to Florida. But every time he moved with a trainer. So that's why I say, like, if I have the opportunity to go with somebody that's going to give me opportunity to do, because he did it, and he did really good too. But right now, that's another one. He got hurt really bad, and he's trying to come back now. But he did really good with his career, and I'm proud of him.
Yeah, and do you talk to him about advice, get advice from him? Does he watch your races? I mean, is he that kind of relationship?
Yeah, we do. Like, early in my career, he helped me a lot to the races. And these big nights like that, I always talk to him. I show him replays of the horses. We go to the races together. Like, he give me advice, like, maybe you should be doing this, maybe putting here. This whole look, like, he asked me, like, we go to the races together, and he's still giving me advice.
Yeah, that's a big help to have somebody in your corner like that all the time.
Yeah, it is.
And so with your career going forward, what would it take for you to move from Charlestown? Would it be somebody come to you, an agent or a trainer, to say, come on, well, let's try this circuit?
Yeah, something like that, but I need to make sure that they are going to give me the opportunity. Like, then let's see. I didn't call me and say, hey, come to this track. I had this training. He have 20-something horses, 30 horses, and he's going to give you opportunity. And a lot of them. That's good. So then I will try it. But I have people tell me before, come here, like, let's try it. I know a few people, but then I see people that work with them before. They never have luck, never successful. So it's hard to go with somebody like that. So that's why I haven't moved yet.
Yeah, and it's hard to walk away from a guy like Jeff Runco. You can go win 8 stakes on a day. I'm not sure that's ever been done by any jockey anywhere on any circuit. So it's hard to walk away from guys that are committed to you and getting on those kind of horses.
Yeah, and then Jeff, every year he brings good horses. Like, every year he got the best baby. So knowing that you had the best this year, and then next year we have something that might be even better, and then every year he goes and gets the best baby. So it's hard to lose something like that. When you know you want to be winning all these state races, you have all these good horses over here. I have my house here, my wife, my family. So starting a new place, it had to be really like 100% sure that I'm going to be at least top 5.
That makes sense. You're a smart kid. How old are you?
I'm 34.
34? So 34, making a living at Charlestown, and yeah, if the right opportunity comes along, you'd leave, but otherwise, and I don't mean to just dwell on opportunity. You're doing great here, and you're happy here, making good money, winning 8 stakes on a night, right?
Yeah, I mean, the money's not, when you win the races I win, the money's not bad here. So I'm pleased with where I am and the money I make here. So to leave, it had to be a really good opportunity, like I say, because I'm pretty good here, I'm happy here, so I'm not having no problem staying here.
Yeah, and I look at your success wherever you are. If you're a success, it's that's strong. That's good. Okay, for the Fanticipate question of the day, who is your biggest fan of your career over the years? Who is your fan? Who's your biggest fan?
My biggest fan, I think, it's my family, my wife, my brother, my mom. Like, that night when I leave the room, I have missed call from them. A lot of messages, they were happy. My mom was actually crying because she saw everywhere in Puerto Rico sharing the post about me. So I think my mom, my wife, and my whole family. And I have a son. He's in jockey school. Wow. So he's one of my biggest fans too. He's supposed to be here in 2 years. He will graduate and he'll become a jockey. So he's another big fan of mine.
The next Boca Chica in the line, right? What's his name?
His name is Abnel Boca Chica.
Wow. And he's in jockey school in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, right now. So he'll be ready for 2023.
2023. Look out, everybody. That's Arnaldo Boca Chica, otherwise known as Boca, leading jockey at Charlestown, winner of 8 stakes the other night, making it big at Charlestown.
I love it. 2023. Look for the next Boca Chica coming soon. Should be fantastic. And good stuff from Arnaldo and from Sean Clancy. My thanks to them, and my thanks to our sponsor, Fanticipate.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
And a special thank you to everyone who took time to bid on the items that were available through the Fanticipate auction last week to benefit Breeders' Cup charities. So many great items that you could have bid on that were part of the actual Breeders' Cup, the, you know, Mike Smith's pants that he wore in the race. And you had Lava Man's saddle towel, which was really cool, the same saddle towel he would be wearing when he escorted Hot Rod Charlie to the post for the Breeders' Cup Classic. There were so many great items, and that's what Fanticipate is all about. You can go to Fanticipate.com to learn more about what they do and all of the upcoming auctions, too. They really do fantastic work. All right, when I come back, we'll join Kurt Becker for his weekly Stroll Through Racing History segment. That story presented by Lane's End and by Keeneland, and then at 10:35 Eastern, I ask, they answer, trainer Dale Romans, turf writer Tim Wilkin. That should be a lot of fun. But Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History is next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. Don't forget, on March 13th, we have the Grade 3 Maple Leaf Stakes for fillies and mares, and on the 14th, the Grade 2 Autumn Stakes for three-year-olds and up. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in 5 countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose 2-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neoptic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time, 12:40 p.m.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. Later today at Aqueduct, the New York Racing Association will run the Artie Schiller Stakes for 3-year-olds and up at a mile on the turf. That's why we are taking a moment to look back at the racing career of that former Breeders' Cup mile winner whose story ranks as one of redemption. Foaled on April 23, 2001 in Kentucky, Artie Schiller was a bay colt by leading turf sire El Prado out of Grade 1 winner Hidden Light. Offered from the consignment of Mill Ridge Sales as agent, he sold at Keeneland September yearling sale in 2002 for $67,000 to William Entenmann, the former president and CEO of the baked goods company, which bears his name and whose products are sold in supermarkets and other major retailers across the United States. Being a businessman at heart, Entenmann, who raced under the name Timber Bay Farm, began assembling his team. For starters, he wanted a partner on the colt, and so he chose his daughter, Denise Walsh, to share ownership. For his trainer, he selected Jimmy Jerkins, a New Yorker and son of Hall of Fame conditioner Alan Jerkins, with Jimmy having just snagged his first career Grade 1 triumph earlier that season with the female sprinter Celtic Melody. And the colt would need a name. So Mr. Entenmann chose the name of a childhood friend from Bay Shore, Long Island, a man who was by now 80 years of age and battling cancer. The man's name, Artie Schiller. With jockey Richard Migliore on board, the equine Artie Schiller made his debut as a juvenile in a turf sprint at Belmont Park in July of 2003. He rallied from last to win by a neck. He would add an allowance victory 2 months later, followed by a stakes placing on the turf at Belmont, and then a fourth-place finish on the dirt in the Grade 2 Remsen Stakes at Aqueduct. It was a respectable two-year-old campaign. In 2004, as a three-year-old, Artie Schiller began to roll. On Preakness weekend at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore, he scored his first stakes victory by taking the Woodlawn Stakes at a mile and a 16th on the turf. A few weeks later, on Belmont Stakes weekend in New York, he got his first graded triumph with a win in the Grade 3 Hill Prince at a mile and an eighth on the inner turf course at Belmont Park. Now clearly emerging as a turf specialist, Artie Schiller posted a runner-up effort to Kitten's Joy at a mile and a quarter in the Virginia Derby, followed by a victory as co-highweight and as even money favorite in the Grade 2 National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame Stakes at Saratoga. Then, on September 26th, he added a win in the Jerome Handicap at Belmont as the 1-5 favorite while carrying top weight of 123 pounds, drawing clear by 5 lengths and setting an inner turf course record for a mile and a 16th of 1 minute 45.5 seconds. He ran the final 8th mile that day at a blistering 11.41 seconds. But all of that was forgotten 1 month later when Artie Schiller finished 12th as the 7-2 favorite in the Breeders' Cup Mile at Lone Star Park in Texas. Some blamed jockey Migliore, saying the colt got a rough trip. But others said that wasn't fair and that really it wasn't clear exactly what had gone wrong. Artie Schiller would return to the races in April of 2005 in the Grade 2 Maker's Mark Mile at Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, Kentucky. He would have a new jockey in Edgar Prado. Artie Schiller was returning from a 5.5-month layoff and was facing a field which included 6 other graded stakes winners. And he would use a final furlong that day in 11.68 seconds to draw clear for the victory. Artie Schiller was back, or so it seemed. In the Dixie Stakes at Pimlico, he lost by a nose as the odds-on favorite. In the Manhattan Handicap at Belmont Park, he lost by a half length, again as the favorite. The decision was then made to put Migliore back in the saddle, and Artie Schiller responded with a win in the Grade 2 Bernard Baruch at Saratoga. Following a runner-up effort by a head in the Grade 2 Kelso Handicap at Belmont while conceding 8 pounds to the winner, Artie Schiller was ready for another try at the Breeders' Cup Mile. This time, the race would be held at Belmont Park, where he had won 4 times in 7 attempts. The jockey would be Garrett Gomez, substituting for an injured Migliore who had broken his leg in the Belmont paddock just 9 days earlier. The date was October 29, 2005. Artie Schiller was the second choice at odds of 5-1, and in the final furlong that day, he would chase down 6-5 favorite La Voix de Saint-Amo to win by 3/4 of a length. Having redeemed himself from the disappointing effort 1 year earlier, Artie Schiller was now a Breeders' Cup winner. Following 3 more starts in 2006, Artie Schiller was retired to stallion duty with a record of 10 wins in 22 starts and earnings of $2 million. A sire of Grade 1 winners We Miss Artie, My Conquistadori, and Bowie's Hero in the U.S., he now stands in Australia, where he has sired Group 1 winners Laserhawk and Flying Artie. And even though he now resides in the Southern Hemisphere, the New York Racing Association still remembers Artie Schiller, as the race named in his honor goes to the post later today at Aqueduct. And we remember him, too, as the winner of the Breeders' Cup Mile at Belmont Park some 16 years ago. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Another fantastic story. My thanks to Kurt, my thanks to Lane's End, and to Keeneland for making those segments possible each and every week. Again, if you did miss that segment, or if you caught just the tail end of it and you want to go back and listen, you can listen to all of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History segments and all of Sean Clancy's In the Room segments on our website, horseracingradio.net. We have a special page created for each one of those, so it's easy for you to listen to whatever content you would like to tune in and listen to at your leisure. When I come back, it is time to welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
A Grade 1 winner on both dirt and turf, War of Will became a classic winner with this victory in the Preakness Stakes. He added turf credentials to his resume with a determined victory in the Grade 1 Maker's Mark Mile, a winner and Grade 1 placed at 2, multiple graded stakes victor at 3, and Grade 1 winner again at 4. This son of War Front has proven his class at every level. A classic winner with a stallion's pedigree, War of Will, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
Weanling shopping? Buy Maryland breds and take advantage of one of the most innovative programs in the country. Breeders earn a 30% share of purses on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing in the top three, and 15% in all stakes when your Maryland bred finishes in the top three, capped at $100,000. Owners earn a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing first, second, or third, and developers get a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland breds in the top three spots. Visit MarylandThoroughbred.com for details.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Pinehurst is in between horses. Papa Cap is down at the rail. Giant Game is sent up four wide, midway on the far turn. After that, it's Double Thunder and Barossa. Corniche coming to the top of the stretch with the lead in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And Giant Game is closing on the outside. Now moving up right alongside of Corniche as they come to the final furlong. Corniche with something left. Giant Game off the rail. Papa Cap trying to split those two, but it's Corniche. He's just too good. Corniche wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And then it was Papa Cap in second. Giant Game was third. Command Performance fourth.
Well, welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, and welcome to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin, who are both here now. Corniche was an ultra-impressive winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile on Friday, taking that field wire-to-wire under Hall of Famer Mike Smith, giving Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert a record-equaling fifth victory in the race. But who cares about Corniche? How about 21-1 long shot Giant Game rounding out the trifecta for our man Dale Romans? Dale, great job, brother. He ran huge.
Thank you. I was touting him all along, and he backed me up, and that's hard to do sometimes for these horses.
Yeah, ran a monster race. He came flying at the end, didn't he?
I was very proud of him. He came running around a turn. We tried to put some pressure on him, and I believe if we'd lagged, we'd have been second. We tried to beat him, so I told him, my jockeys, don't, if he's easy lead, go after him early, and he did. And I was very proud. Looks like he's going to have a fun spring.
Yeah, it should be fantastic, and this segment should be fantastic. Looking forward to the conversation as we look back on the Breeders' Cup this morning. Last week, I started asking each of you, what would be the most surprising result? Gamine losing the Filly and Mare Sprint or Tarnawa getting beat in the Breeders' Cup turf? Well, guys, we didn't discuss the idea that both would end up getting beat in their respective races. So what do we make of those two results?
Well, first I want to congratulate Dale also for the juvenile. But I wish you could have got second, Dale, because then I would have cashed the ticket.
Yeah, I heard that from a lot of people, but thank you, Tim.
So I'm not going to hold that against you. We'll make up for it in the prep season for the Derby.
There you go.
But as far as I was surprised Gamine got beat. I mean, I know that Gamine probably has lost a step since last year, but I still thought she was going to be good enough to beat this field in the distaff. I expected that Della Sofia would challenge, and she did, and that was Gamine's undoing. I really thought that she would win the race because of her class. I mean, she's won 9 of her 10 races going into that race. And as far as Tarnawa, I was not a Tarnawa fan going into this race. I'm not surprised that she got beat, and she was never really a factor. But, yeah, so I would say I'm surprised in Gamine. I'm not surprised in Tarnawa.
Yeah, I would say that's the beauty of the Breeders' Cup. And after going to so many and being a part of so many of them, I've learned not to be surprised. And that's why you can't duck one horse. You got to go. You got to show up. That's why we took our horses. That's why I took Court Vision. That's why I took Tappet's Fly. That's why I ran Little Mike in a mile and a half. That's just the beauty of the Breeders' Cup. If you got a horse doing well, you can't worry about a heavy favorite, and you can't duck one horse.
Look at all the heavy favorites that got beat.
Yeah.
It wasn't just this one.
Yeah. I think if we learn anything, too, that, you know, Dale, you know this better than anybody. These horses are not machines, right?
They're not machines. And if you look at the body of work that a horse has to do to become the favorite for the Breeders' Cup, I mean, a lot of times I believe they get there and they're a little tired.
And I think there's some people think that these horses, especially the real good ones, are machines. They expect them to do it every single time, and that's just not the case. I mean, we saw it last weekend. It's with Jackie's Warrior, with Latruska, Gamine. I mean, it's not going to happen every time for these horses. And you know, as good as they are, and as good as their handlers take care of them, you don't know if they're going to show up every day. And obviously, some of them didn't show up last week.
Yeah, unless your name is Personal Ensign.
She showed up. That's why that was the greatest Breeders' Cup of all time.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic.
Or if your name is American Pharoah, unless you go to the Travers.
Right, exactly. He didn't show up that day, and that's why I kept running against him.
Yep. All right, topic number two. This involves 3-year-old Essential Quality, who was sent off as the post-time favorite in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He finished third behind his stablemate Nick's Go and fellow 3-year-old Medina Spirit. That means that Medina Spirit has now finished in front of Essential Quality in both of their head-to-head meetings this year, the Kentucky Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic. They have each won a Classic race this year, and they have each won an additional Grade 1 after those Classics. So, guys, I ask you, who gets your vote for 3-year-old champion? Dale?
I go with Medina Spirit. And we take the controversy out of it, remove the controversy. I don't think to do with the horse. He won the Derby, which is heavily weighted, in my opinion, than the other two. And he is 2-for-2 against him and second against old horse in the championship race. I think he's a 3-year-old champion. And, of course, Nick's Go's Horse of the Year.
Well, you know, it's This is a real, real tough thing for me. I mean, I have a vote, and I don't have no idea who I'm going to vote for yet. I mean, if Medina Spirit keeps the Derby, you know, he is the Derby winner. But Essential Quality, you know, he won 5 of his first 6 races this year before the Breeders' Cup, but he also didn't beat older horses, which Medina Spirit did. If Medina Spirit loses his Derby win, I think I vote for Essential Quality. But I don't think that's going to happen before the votes are going to be taken. And the sad thing about this is, because of social media, people are going to be crucifying Medina Spirit, saying he shouldn't be 3-year-old because of things that haven't happened yet. It's all you got to have your day in court, as they say. I mean, you're innocent until proven guilty, right?
Yeah.
So I think that if I was voting today, I think I would vote for Medina Spirit.
Take the Kentucky Derby out of the equation and take everything that happened from the Triple Crown, throw it out the window, and just look at their resume over the summer, right, and over the fall leading into the Breeders' Cup. You had Essential Quality win the Travers. Medina Spirit won the Awesome Again Stakes over older horses. Essential Quality doesn't have a win over older horses. And then Medina Spirit outfinishes him and finishes in front of him in the Breeders' Cup Classic. You know, if you just take it based on that, guys, you have to look at Medina Spirit as being the one, right?
I think so.
I do too. I mean, it's he didn't. Essential Quality didn't beat Medina Spirit. So
yep.
What is that? So doesn't he get the win? Doesn't he get the trophy?
Yeah, I would think so too. We'll have to see how this all plays out. But again, just do the voters penalize the horse because of what's hanging over his head with the Kentucky Derby? We'll see. All right, topic
unfortunately,
three.
I think some people will do that.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah. Topic three. I'm really anxious to get your thoughts on this. We didn't get an opportunity to talk about this topic last week, but last Saturday I did spend a lot of time on this show talking about the confusion and the miscommunication that took place prior to the start of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, which was won by Modern Games, who ended up running for purse money only. It was certainly not a popular decision with horse players, but there were failures in protocols which led to that decision, and that's what is most alarming. What are your thoughts on what took place, and how does racing make sure that type of thing never happens again? Dale?
What can go wrong will go wrong. And, you know, it's just a mistake. I think most of the protocols are good. I think the way we do things are done well. I don't know exactly what all happened, but I know that if you run as many races as we do in North America, I know it's the biggest stage, things can happen. And once the money was taken out of the pool, it couldn't go back in, and there wasn't anything else they could do. At least they let the horse run and didn't penalize the ownership group by making sure that they didn't run, just to make themselves look better.
Yeah, Timmy?
You know, it's, again, this is just, it's an isolated incident. It doesn't happen that often, but when it does happen, it's on the biggest stage. You know that people are going to scream and holler and within their rights. I mean, the gambler got screwed on this one because of some big-time mistakes. I mean, there were, the veterinarian didn't even, he scratched the horse without even examining the horse. And then when when Modern Games came out of the gate, you know, they assumed he broke out of the gate, which he didn't. An assistant starter let him out of the gate. I mean, I think that, you know, it's not like you're going to make disciplinary action against the veterinarian, the starters, because, again, it is human error. People do make mistakes. But when there's money involved, man, there's a lot of people really ticked off at this whole thing, and I don't blame them. But, you know, you can't get that money back. I mean, I felt bad for the people that, you know, had some money riding on this, but I didn't feel bad for myself because I bet Tis the Bomb.
Yeah, there's two sides to every coin, and I heard that from a couple of people that did bet Tis the Bomb, and you know, they were obviously happy because they were, like you, Timmy, they were cashing a ticket, but the way that, you know, things were miscommunicated, and as Dale said, the mistakes were made, I guess my question now is, what does racing do to make sure that this type of thing doesn't happen again? Does the rule need to be rewritten, or what do we need to do?
Maybe you don't have to have as many people out on the track. It seemed like there were just too many people involved with making this decision, and everyone was saying one thing, and then the guy that was making the decision made the decision based on what he heard. I don't know if there's anything they can do. If they keep it the way it is now, what else can you do? It's not like you're gonna take some of the vets away from the starting gate.
Yeah,
I think you do an extensive review of what happened, come out with a report for the people so they can understand it, and if there's a way to improve and make it not happen again, you do it. But if we do that, even when we do that, something else will come along, and you only fix things once they've been broken. You don't know to fix a lot of things. They do the best they can.
And the people that figure that they lost money on this, they're never going to be happy. So you're not going to win that.
Yeah, and by the way, Breeders' Cup did come out with a, and the CHRB came out with a new protocol for the Saturday races after this incident on Friday, where they assign one veterinarian to be the one communicating with the stewards, as opposed to having too many cooks in the kitchen and too many people trying to make calls and decisions. They had one veterinarian, and that was it. And I think that that goes a long way toward fixing the problem going forward.
We created our own problem because of other things that have happened in the Breeders' Cup and around big races. We got too many cooks in the kitchen. But go ahead. Next topic.
Yep, next topic. So the Japanese brought over a record number of runners for this year's Breeders' Cup. And up until now, you could pretty much dismiss most of the Japanese contenders as well as non-contenders. Their lone win in the Breeders' Cup came with Kara Conti in the 2014 Breeders' Cup Mile. But after winning two Breeders' Cup races this year, guys, should we start taking the Japanese horses a little more seriously when they come over?
Oh, I think that you have to now. I mean, look what they did, and they're showing how serious they are. Just the other last couple days at the Keeneland sale, I mean, they bought, I think Tuesday, they bought six mares for like just under $13 million, including Swiss Skydiver, Simply Ravishing. They're going to become a serious horse player. I mean, it used to be the stories like when they would come over to her for a Triple Crown race, even this year when they came over to the Preakness. It was like, oh, the Japanese are here. They don't have any chance. It's nice that they're here. They're nice people, but we don't take them too serious. I think now, especially after the Breeders' Cup, they had, what, seven horses in, I think, in the 2 days. They win the two of them. Yeah, you got to take them serious. Absolutely.
Well, Asia loves their horse racing. It's a great thing for racing for them to win. You got to take them serious. Like I say, Yoshida came over here and spent a ton of money in the last 2 days, and that's good for the economy. But also, just to have Asia have an interest in American racing, and as much as they like to bet, I'm sure it helped the pool to have those horses here.
Oh, yeah. They were betting in Japan. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
Yeah, they love their horse racing, and that program certainly getting to the point now where they can compete worldwide, and we saw that last weekend. All right, last topic, guys, before we wrap it up. Which Breeders' Cup winner impressed you most? Dale, you want it first?
Yeah, you got to go with Nick's Go, in my opinion. He ran against two classic winners, ran against a champion. He took the race to him, and he did it in the right way. I think his race was the best one on the card, deserving Horse of the Year.
Timmy?
Yeah, I mean, Nick's Go was impressive. But I think the most impressive performance I thought was Life is Good in the Dirt Mile. He won by 5-plus lengths, did it very professionally. I mean, he might be, you know, if he hadn't been sidelined for much of the year, we might be staring at him as the 3-year-old champion. He was so, so impressive winning the Dirt Mile. And I can't wait and hopeful that Nick's Go and Life is Good meet in the Pegasus in Florida early next year, because I think that would be a race that would be huge for racing, and it would put a shot back into, you know, the popularity of that that race down in Florida. Because the last couple of years, I don't think it had the juice that it might have had at the beginning. But a Nick's Go Life is Good matchup, I think, would be awesome and huge for the game.
I agree. He ran a big race too. I just gave more credibility to the field. I'm a strong believer. You can't pick who you run against, so shouldn't penalize him. But that was such a good field in the Classic.
Yeah, and I think the future of the game is in good shape. I loved Echo Zulu. She was brilliant, and it's going to be fun to watch her develop next year. Corniche, as we know, ran huge. Dale's horse ran huge. You know, it's interesting that now Peter Floor, who is the owner of Corniche, he should have 30 Derby points to his credit already, but because of the situation involving Bob Baffert, his horses aren't allowed to earn points for the Kentucky Derby. Peter Floor is now going to have to make a decision as to what he does with this horse. Does he move him away from Baffert, or does he take a shot that things will get overturned and that Bob will be able to get points going forward?
I hope he leaves him with Bob and says, we're not running the Derby, we'll go right to the Preakness.
Yeah, but that's a tough thing to say, boy.
I mean, it is, but I think that would get him crawfishing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you probably know better than I, Dale, because you're the king of Churchill Downs. But is Churchill Downs ever going to budge on this?
No, they're not going to budge. But I'm strongly against them using the Derby as a weapon, and that's what they're doing.
They're absolutely doing that, and that's and that can come back and bite them in the behind.
It will one day.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we'll see how that all plays out, and really appreciate the time again this morning. I asked, they answered. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. We'll come back next week, do it all over again.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
All right, there you have it. I asked, they answered. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. Yeah, you know, Dale's point and Tim's point about using the Kentucky Derby as a weapon, that is indeed what CDI is doing here. Now they have every right to do it. It's their race. It's their signature event. They can make the rules there and call the shots. But, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what Peter Fleur decides to do here with Corniche. He does have some decisions to make, and I think he has to make them relatively quickly. Maybe not within the next week or two, but he has to make that decision if he is going to move Corniche from Bob Baffert. He has to get him to either another barn on the West Coast, which would probably be the most ideal scenario because the horse is already there, or if he's going to move him to another trainer in another part of the country, get him there, get him acclimated, get that other trainer familiar with that horse, and let him start getting a game plan to move forward. These things don't happen overnight. It'll be very interesting to see how this plays out over the and Corniche is going to be the juvenile champion, right? I said that at the top of the show. I don't know if it's not quite as cut and dry as Echo Zulu, but it's pretty much as cut and dry as Echo Zulu. And the only thing that gives you pause on Corniche is the fact that Jack Christopher, who was going to run in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, he was the morning line favorite. He's also undefeated, and he was scratched. So we don't know how good Jack Christopher is. Might not have mattered. Corniche might have smoked him anyway. But maybe not. So that's the only fly in the ointment. If you're a voter and you're thinking about maybe Corniche isn't quite as deserving as we would think, I think that's I think you throw all that out the window. I think Corniche won. He's undefeated. He won on the biggest stage. He beat the field that he needed to beat. To me, it's Corniche. Echo Zulu, it should be unanimous on her. She was absolutely brilliant in that Juvenile Fillies. All right, I'm going to get to another break. When I come back, I'll get a chance to wrap up the show, a word from Blood Horse, and look ahead to what's coming up here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer. Go to takeahealthystand.org.
I'm 3-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, the new Blood Horse Plus, available through bloodhorse.com, provides you with exclusive content for all subscribers, including behind-the-scenes videos and interviews, which now includes the popular new Three Things to Know, or Three Things You May Not Know About. And that's hosted by Claire Crosby. She takes you behind the scenes to learn some fun things about some of your favorite horses, including Nick's Go, She Dares the Devil, Lava Man, and more. You can check out these exclusive videos and all that is new at Blood Horse Plus, available on bloodhorse.com. And that's what Blood Horse now has to offer. Plus, there's one website that is the industry's go-to site for racing, breeding, sales, and news, and that is bloodhorse.com. From stories and news to sire lists, results, and videos, you can see more on leading earners and all of those things at bloodhorse.com. It's a great website. I use it quite often, as a matter of fact. It's my homepage. I go there and get all the information I need right off the bat every single day. All right. My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible this morning. Those include Wayne Catalano, who was, man, so much fun to kick off the show with him. He has so much energy. He's so funny. And actually called out Bobby Flay during his interview. Said that they've started posting a lot of cooking videos, or he's starting posting them on Twitter. And I brought up Bobby Flay, and he said he would beat Bobby Flay. So we'll have to have a little throw down for charity. That would be a lot of fun. But Wayne was great. Go back and listen to that interview if you missed it. Cricket Goodall was with me from the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. What a Breeders' Cup for them with two winners. Byron King from Blood Horse was here to look back on Breeders' Cup. And our Unsung Hero segment presented by Claiborne was Carl Woods. They know he's better known as Dink around the racetrack, the California Starting Gate crew member who was loaded into the ambulance before the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, and you can go back and listen to that segment on our site as well. Michael McCarthy joined me for a few minutes to look back on the Philly and Mare Sprint and that big win with CeCe. In the room with Sean Clancy, his visit with Arnaldo Boca Chica this week. Kurt Becker strolled through racing history, and my thanks to Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin for being here with I Ask, They Answer in the previous segment. If you missed any portion of this show, simply head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. And for all of you who did weigh in on the poll question today, who do you feel should be the 3-year-old male champion here in 2021? Is it Medina Spirit? Is it Essential Quality? Or is there somebody else you think could throw their hat into the ring? I don't think so. I think it comes down to those two. For everyone who took time to weigh in on that poll question, thank you for doing that this morning on our social media pages and via email. But if you did miss any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out those podcasts. One podcast you won't want to miss, and you can catch this show every single week, Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. This past week, I sat down with George Leonard III and spent a full hour talking with George about his life and his career and being at the Breeders' Cup for the very first time with California Angel, the 2-year-old filly who ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. She didn't run the way that George would have liked her to run that day, but it doesn't matter. The way he presented it was so cool that was his shining moment. That was for a guy that is trained mostly lower-level claiming horses at Indiana Grand and throughout the Midwest for much of his career. This was his shining moment. And he had his wife by his side who works with him. He had his family come out from Louisiana. He's from a small town in Louisiana. His family was there. And it was a special week for the Leonard family. And it was a really fun story, really fun interview. So go back and listen to it. Trainer Talk with George Leonard III posted on our website now. And get ready to bet the races this weekend with the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts as Bobby Newman walks through all of the big races with you every single Friday here on the network. And if you're going to be betting the races, it is Must Listen Radio. That is also posted on our website as well. Well, the Breeders' Cup is in the rearview mirror, which means the conversation does indeed turn to the Eclipse voting. And I started the show by telling you about some of the horses that are surefire horses to get voted champion. Of course, Nick's Go, Horse of the Year. I don't think anybody is debating that right now. But there are some other categories, including that three-year-old championship, that are up for grabs. And we'll have to see how that all plays out over the weeks and the months ahead as we edge closer to the Eclipse Awards. Timmy pointed out the fact that we could see Nick's Go and Life is Good in the Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream. How good would that be? Nick's Go going off the stud after that. Life is Good. We'll see what happens with him, but going to be fantastic. A lot of great racing still ahead. A lot of great programming here on the network still ahead. Check out our full schedule on our website as well. Now, my thanks to all of our guests for being here this morning. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio. To Chauncey for handling all of our social media. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. And, yeah, go Steelers. Let's not come down to the wire this week.